The Boeing 777, affectionately referred to as the 777, is not in fact a reference to the winning of any form of jackpot, which is good, because the level of tease involved in the notion that one could win any kind of standard jackpot and be able to purchase a Boeing 777 is laughable at best. The 777 is once again categorized as a wide body. We discussed wide bodies in a previous episode, and we don't need to belabor the whole idea that it's funny to make fun of the narrator. That spawned from a program that began in the year 1990. The prototype took its first flight in 1994, and finally went into service under United Airlines in 1995, in their alleged friendly skies. It certainly lives up to its descriptor of being a wide body. According to documentation related to the aircraft, it can seat 10 abreast. I'm going to pause for a smidgen now and have a 16-year-old moment to let that metaphor sink in. There we have it, continuing on. In order to accommodate this new contraption, Boeing was forced to double the size of its Everett, Washington manufacturing facility. Two new assembly lines were needed to keep up with the demand for orders of this new and exciting flying machine. At beginning of production, they already had 118 firm orders. You may have another 16-year-old moment now. With options for 95 more on top of that, Boeing invested $4 billion American dollars into the program with an additional $2 billion from suppliers. And you thought that a jackpot might snag you one of these bad boys. While this thing started out as second only to the 747 as the most lucrative aircraft in the arsenal of Boeing offerings, it became the breadwinner of the company in the early 2000s. In 2007, Boeing announced that all their production slots were booked out through 2012, and in 2010 they announced plans to increase production from 5 aircraft per month to 7. You may think that producing 7 entire aircraft in a month seems like a long time, but you have to remember that these are not Legos. It takes a tremendous amount of human intervention to keep production going, and those rivets aren't going to rivet themselves. Airworthiness takes more time than you think. Variants of this aircraft continue to be produced to this present day. In fact, the 777-X model first flew in January of 2020, with expected deliveries for 2022 and now delayed to 2023. You see, Breath of the Wild 2 is not the only thing getting pushed back, much to the dismay of consumers. The 777 has amassed a significant amount of airtime as a collective, over 35 million hours of flight time since its first flights. That's almost as many hours as the entire library of the SML podcast. On top of that, if you utilize the average flight speed of 540 miles per hour, that equates to over 19 billion miles of flight distance. You could go from the Earth to Saturn and back 13 times with that kind of distance, except for the minor detail that you would die. Those things are not designed for spaceflight. Come on! The thing certainly has longevity at its back, and for so long as the wind stays in its sails, it will continue to be a moneymaker for this American-born manufacturer of flying devices for people who just can't patiently stay where they're at. Conventions, tourism, all of the things that necessitate flights are now back in vogue. Please continue to protect yourselves and abide by rule number one. Don't death.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a hell of a show lined up for you. Starting things off, Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good.
That you didn't sound ready.
What?
Whoa.
I'm never prepared to speak on my status.
That's good. We have a guest joining us. PartyCast is going to happen later on in the show, but we are starting things off with a banger. Jim Dershberger, you are here. You are back for your, what, third time on the show?
Yeah, I can't quit you guys.
From Wide Right Interactive, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yeah, we're still kind of recovering from the launch of our last game, but as I was saying, you know, no major bugs, nothing catastrophic. You know, you try and avoid those, but they sometimes they
you do what you can.
You can only test so much.
You mentioned a new game. Wide Right just put out a brand new game, what, last week?
Yeah, on May 5th, we launched our game, Riff Tracks the Game, a multiplayer party game where you compete to make bad movies funny.
For the people who don't know what Riff Tracks is, what you guys are all about.
How dare you, first off.
Yeah, if you don't know what Riff Tracks is, why are you listening to this, first off? Yeah, Jim, tell us, what is Riff Tracks and what is Riff Tracks the Game?
All right, well, this goes way back, but Riff Tracks is kind of an offshoot of Mystery Science Theater 3000, which was a show running, I think, from the late 80s through the 90s, where a bunch of people watching bad movies, making fun of it. It's very funny. And some of the cast members from that spun off their own company called Riff Tracks, where they also watch bad movies and make fun of it. And, you know, we did this party game last year called What the Dub, where heavily inspired by Riff Tracks at Mystery Science Theater, where you and your friends watch bad movies and make fun of it. So, you know, Riff Tracks being a huge inspiration for us, we thought, what better way to kind of iterate on that for the next version and go to the men themselves, the Riff Tracks team.
Get the official guys on the job.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Mike Nelson, Kevin Murphy, Bill Corbett, those are, like, my comedy heroes. I grew up, you know, sneaking downstairs late at night to watch Beavis and Butthead, and then I would watch, you know, Mystery Science Theater on the Sci-Fi Channel, and, you know, you never laugh harder. Like, it's just classic comedy. So, yeah, we were trying to bring, you know, first and foremost, they have a great sense of humor. But they also have a gigantic library of films. Riff Tracks has been around for over 15 years.
Which blows my mind, by the way. That just the fact that Riff Tracks is that old. Like, Riff Tracks is ready to drive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We old now, you know.
Oh, my back. My back.
I know. So, yeah, you know, they've been doing it for a long time, and they certainly got the formula down. So, whereas What the Dub was limited to the kind of shadowy corners of the public domain footage, Riff Tracks could kind of, they got, you know, they got that Riff Tracks money. They can license stuff. So, yeah, it was great to be able to lean on their library of insanely weird content, but then also look at kind of creative ways to integrate their humor into the gameplay in ways that, you know, is fun for fans of the Riff Tracks Mystery Science Theater cinematic universe or not. You know, whether or not we succeeded, I guess, is up to the fans.
Well, I think it's been a success. Chris, I know you and I played it like a week and a half ago, something like that. Had a blast. Yeah. I have been randomly joining just whoever's playing Riff Tracks the Game. I will jump into their stream and be like, hi, I'm a stranger, I'm going to play with you, and I will usually beat them. Not to brag or anything, but I do pretty good
nothing
at the
better
game. I have to say, I think I have a fairly decent sense of humor when it comes to games like this. So Carnage has been there, he's been around, he wins a few too with all his shitty puns.
Yeah, Carnage.
And I saw a guy jump into a stream, I can't remember the name of the streamer, but someone jumped in from his chat, and I think they had over like 22 or 25,000 points, like completely destroyed everyone, and they were all bangers.
Wow.
You know, I'm like, who is this sleeper comedian? Like, I need to find this person and hire them because they got a gift. We did a few preview rounds for, you know, during the announcement of the game, where we had, you know, games journalists come in and they played with the Riff Tracks writers, as well as Kevin and Bill. And I'm just like, you know, watching these writers come in, it's like, oh, you poor bastard. You're going to get wrecked. And surprisingly, a few of them held their own. I was really, really shocked. But the Riff Trax writers, who generated well over 2,800 jokes just for this game, all brand new, all custom, they're quick on their feet, you know? And yeah, you got to watch out. You get a sleeper in your game, and it's you're done. You know, by round three, you're just like, this is not even fair.
That is a lot of jokes in one game. 2,800 jokes in one game. Is that joke overload?
Yeah, it's kind of out of, it is. It's insane that they were able to write that, record it, and actually deliver it on time. But yeah, so what we do is, you know, we show you a movie clip, and there's two ways to play. You can write your own joke. And one thing that we wanted to do is kind of help people out. We didn't have this feature in What the Dub, but sometimes you get a clip, or maybe you're new to this kind of game and you got nothing. So we're like, what would really help is just throwing that person a lifeline with, we call it the riff for me button, where you click the button and we'll provide a riff for you. And, you can have it, you can opt to have it read through text to speech, or you can have one of the Riff Trax teams, the recording play. But, you know, if you got maybe two not so funny friends playing, you need more riff for me. So we ended up doing about, 10 to 12 per clip.
Oh, wow.
And nice. Yeah, there's, 250 something clips in the game. So yeah, we wound up with, well over 2,800 clips. But then, we have this library of just one-liners of all these jokes, and from that was kind of born the pick a riff mode, which is the second gameplay mode where, rather than writing, we show you a clip and then we deal you six of those pre-recorded riffs. So everyone's kind of playing on the same playing field. There's no, my joke was text to speech and yours was a Riff Trax quip. They're all recorded. And you kind of have to play your hand through the rounds and pick the right joke or not, see if you have one. It's very random. It's very surreal in a way, because there's a lot of non sequiturs, and you're really kind of, you live and die by the hand you're dealt. But
I think, Chris, you likened it to apples, but funny.
Yeah, or like, Cards Against Humanity, but I actually want to play it.
Yeah. It's a tricky mode. I think, some people love it. We've heard from a lot of people are like, I thought that this was going to just be a big waste of time, and now I only play that. And some people are like, this is just too random for me to find the humor in it. So it's kind of high risk, high reward.
I love the mode, but you have to turn Riffbot off because that's just unfair.
Yeah, Riffbot is...
they cheat. Riffbot cheats. They know what the clip is. They get to pick the right jokes all the time. Turn Riffbot off, and it's six people throwing out random jokes to weird clips is funny as hell. And Riffbot otherwise is going to win every game.
Plus, I think it should be noted, too, that once a game, you can kind of shuffle your deck and get some new quips if you're like, I don't think I can find a context for these, so I'm just gonna get rid of them.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. Right now we're at that stage where you launch, you look for obviously strong sales and good feedback, and then you start looking at the bad feedback or the constructive feedback. And I think the one thing we've heard across the board is Riffbot's got to chill. He's like way too good.
Only in the pick a riff mode.
Right. And, cause it's appropriate. You feel like you at least have a fighting chance, when you can construct your own riff. So we're like, if we make him truly random, or we have to try and find a way where there's like a 1 in 5 chance he'll be able to use one of the bangers that goes with the clips. I think our thinking was, because everything is so random, it might help to have one that is somewhat grounded with actually what's going on, but it feels like a cheat. It feels like, hey, this guy's playing with a different deck. I want his deck. So yeah, we've kind of toyed with the idea of maybe making him completely random, or at least making it an option. Another thing is people want their deck to refresh with every round, but there's no refreshes during that round. Interesting option. I don't know if I love that, but you know, because you burn with six players, you're going to burn through those 2,800 jokes pretty damn fast. So. Yeah. You know, it's delicate balance, you know, trying to make something playable, but not have it have too many repeats or not have it be too boring. So, yeah, we're in that phase now. We're rolling out patches pretty much every other day, it feels like. And we actually have some new content coming out next week. We're doing our first free update. I think we're going to have 50 new clips.
Oh, wow.
From... Nice. Yeah, we're going to the vault, the Rift Tracks vault, and I'm blanking on some of the names, but it's like the Wonderful Land of Oz.
Oh no.
just yikes.
I watched that one recently, actually.
Why?
Because it's Rift Tracks. I love Rift Tracks.
Oh, that's fair.
I mean, it does diminish the pain.
I thought you meant you watched the original without Rift Tracks.
It's what got me through all the Twilight films and the Harry Potter films.
Yeah.
I don't love Rift Tracks enough to watch Twilight. I'm sorry.
Well, you're lost. It was pretty great.
Yeah,
that's something I love about Rift Tracks, though, is they started off just riffing movies that they could never touch with Mystery Science Theater. And then they're like, you know what? Why don't we just acquire movies? And now they have their own huge library.
Yeah, and they still do the classic just the jokes where, you know, for the Star Wars of the world, you know, they just do their thing and you sync it up. But yeah, their output is probably, you know, even if you don't find them funny, you have to look at their body of work and just be like, they just go, you know. They know what their lane is. They know what they're good at. I think they're exceptional at it, and they just produce. They don't stop, you know. They have a live show coming up. They just got done with they did a Kickstarter earlier this year, you know, plus this game that they're supporting. So they're very busy guys.
I saw them playing the game on the launch stream. That was pretty fantastic watching them actually play the game.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, watching them play with some of the reviewers doing the preview sessions was awesome, because yeah, they you know, they hold their own. They're not just the pretty face. Turns out they're actually very very funny on their own, even with or without the writers, you know.
So Chris, what kind of questions do you have about this game? I know you are a Rift Tracks fan.
Yeah, it's hard to like come up with questions about it. It's so face value, you know, like
I'm curious to know how you got in touch with the Rift Tracks guys to make this happen. Like, did you contact them? Did they contact you?
It started with a tweet after we launched What the Dub, and we were kind of taken by surprise. You know, gain some traction fairly quickly, and we're like, you know, wouldn't it be cool to do like a Rift Tracks or a Mystery Science Theater 3000 game? So we just tweeted at all the guys and said, hey, you know, we're basically watching through the completion of the end of Freedom Finger and all through What the Dub, the Rift Tracks Twitch channel, which is, you know, 24/7, they're just streaming. Yeah, I love their that content. Channel. It's so good. I love it. And yeah. So, you know, late nights of play testing, you know, you turn the game volume down and you turn the Rift Tracks up, and you just let it kind of like carry you through some of the longer play testing sessions. And so anyways, they saw it. They were obviously aware of What the Dub because a lot of reviewers were comparing it to Rift Tracks. So they were getting notifications, and yeah, then they reached out and said, hey, we saw your tweet. Maybe this could be a thing. Let's talk about it. And very quickly, we decided, you know, yes, we can make this work. I think What the Dub had been out for, I don't know, probably like 8 months at the time. when we kind of sealed the deal and just got to work. And I, you know, I think at one point there was maybe a thought that this could be almost like an add-on or, you know, additive like content.
DLC to What the Dub?
Yeah, but there, you know, again, listening to the best resource that you have as a developer is the people who play your game in the wild in all the ways that you could never imagine that they're going to play it. That's how they break it, but that's how they give you real positive feedback that's most of the time pretty actionable and makes you kind of be like, damn, why didn't we think of that? So a lot of the feedback that we got from What the Dub when we started kind of tinkering under the hood and fixing some of the things and adding the different modes and adding things like remote play or built-in voice chat, you're like, you know, this is kind of a whole new game. It's kind of its own thing. And then, of course, the difference between just the approach to the clips, like What the Dub was all about replacing a missing line of dialogue, whereas Riff Tracks is more of a generalization. It's just a, hey, look at this dumb movie. Mm-hmm. Here's a clip. Got something to say about it? You know, like, make fun of the guy's shirt. Even if his mouth isn't moving, you don't necessarily have to, you know, like, a riff could be a dub, but a dub can't be a riff, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, after that, we're kind of off and completed the game in, you know, just under a year, I think. So,
wow. That's pretty quick turnaround.
Okay, so who picked the clips?
That would be the all the clips came from films that we started with the list that Riff Tracks had the license to and what we could make sure we could clear, and then they picked the clips and you know, we provide feedback, but they know these movies kind of inside and out.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, we kind of let them do their thing with the movies.
Nice.
And what did you guys do on your end? Like just the coding and stuff? How did you get the, you mentioned voice chat. Is that new to the, like, how does that work? Is that multiple people with the game?
Yeah. Actually, so if you,
I had turned it off whenever when I was playing the game, cause it didn't seem like it was, anybody was going for it.
Yeah. I didn't know how it worked.
Yeah. If you are playing a remote game, so if someone is hosting a game and you want to join remotely, rather than having to use a, you know, Discord or Zoom or whatever it is to voice chat, you can use the built-in voice chat inside of the game. So that was the one thing that we couldn't do with What the Dub. We found that on, you know, on PC, it's pretty easy to stream it, Discord, Zoom, share your screen. It's easy. On, you know, on PlayStation, you can do kind of like broadcasts. You can do like groups and you can broadcast, you can share your screen with like another person. But I believe like those broadcasts cap out at around an hour and then you have to restart it. So it's not quite ideal. And then Xbox doesn't really have a screen sharing feature as far as I'm aware, that's like native to the, you know, the OS that they have.
No, so they have just have Twitch. Yeah.
And you know, Switch, what are you going to do? How do you screen share that? You know, you got to hold up a camera or something. It's like ridiculous. So
tape a cell phone to your head and just stare at the Switch.
Yeah. And
remember when you can help just like hold a phone on your shoulder and just lean it up against your ear.
Yeah. Just like that. But, so the remote game was a way to kind of like meet people in the middle. It's not, you know, full matchmaking lobby service, but if you have a friend who owns the game, and you just want to like, hey, do you want to play right now? I got someone at my house. You got someone on your end. We got four people, two consoles. We're not in the same room. We can still do voice chat. We can still play together. It's all in sync. And you just go. So that felt like a good middle ground in trying to bring that kind of local experience, you know, broaden that a little bit.
That's pretty cool. You also have like expanded Twitch integration this time.
Yeah, I think most of the Twitch stuff is more of the same, where you can do Twitch chat voting, which was a huge hit with What the Dub, where...
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, that is so... That's something we didn't launch with What the Dub, and when we added it, it was kind of a game changer for us. Yeah, so anyone in the chat can just press, you know, 1 through 6 on their keyboard and vote for the clip when it's time to vote. And that's something I really hope we get an opportunity to expand on with Rift Tracks, because personally, I would love to see, you know, like the Twitch chat be able to pick a clip and pick a riff, you know. I don't think you could technically do a Twitch chat write a riff. I don't know how that would work. Maybe, you know.
Oh, that would get
take
ugly
the first
fast.
Word from. Yeah. yeah, a lot of bands getting handed out with that. But with pick a riff, you could do just like voting. You know, you could show, hey, here's your 6 choices. Chat, pick one, and let chat kind of play with the streamer.
Vote and decide what they want to submit, and they could just be a player. Chat could be one whole player. That'd be a cool little addition if that could work.
Yeah, so I think that's what we're, you know, we have the 50 clips coming out hopefully next week, and then we'll probably have another 50, I want to say in early June. And then, you know, throughout, we're kind of exploring some smaller tweaks and improvements and maybe some bigger stuff. It just depends on.
Could we see paid DLC of any bigger movies?
You know, that's definitely something we've talked about. Because DLC is one of those things. I don't know how you guys feel about it. I feel like I've been so burnt on, like, upgrades and add-ons and, you know, deluxe editions and all this stuff. Like, everything that we've done, any add-on that we've done for any game, from Freedom Finger, we did a massive update where we added new levels and music, and, you know, we've dropped new clips on What the Dove. They're just free, you know? Like, once you're at the party, like, you're at the party, man. Like, you're in. That being said, if it opens the door to getting larger films, and those films are, you know, have value to the players, like, yeah, I think it depends, but I think I'd be open to that.
Just get like a Nicolas Cage party pack DLC bundle, just some of his movies.
On. Yeah, like I would pay $4 for that. You know, if you gave me like 50 to 100 Nicolas Cage clips, like, I'm down. Let's do it. You know.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm sold. Let's do it. That's our one good idea for this stream.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage Face DLC.
Because right? Face Off is like a legendary Riff Tracks, you know? Like, so I would love to do that. Or, you know, you go in the opposite direction. You do like a Steven Seagal or worse.
Oh,
you know?
Man. They just came out with a Steven Seagal one that I still need to buy and download. That looks really good.
His karate is just like,
oh god, yeah.
No one said anything. Like, the whole film crew watched this go down. It was just like, yes, we're gonna let another human being film themselves do this and distribute it. You know,
it's you know, that or relinquish the paycheck. You know, like, they gotta make their money.
Cash is king.
Cash is king. Yeah.
Poor Steven Seagal. He didn't do anything to us. He deserves it.
So, you know, it's funny because just to riff on Steven Seagal for a minute, like, I don't know if I imagined this, but like, he did a show where he was like a cop, right?
Yeah,
in like New Orleans, where he was like
New Orleans. Yeah, I don't remember what it was called, but I'm looking it up now.
Like, is that available on streaming anywhere? Because I feel like I just need to.
It's called Lawman.
Oh, of course it is.
And, it's got 3 stars on IMDb. Why?
3 out of 10?
Yeah, 3 out of 5.
What?
6 out of 10.
What the?
Well, I mean, okay, are you really going to go on IMDb.com and bother to vote for Steven Seagal's Lawman unless you're, like, kind of a fan?
True. And you're like, really, I love Steven Seagal. 6.
Yeah, it's a 3. I love Steven Seagal. He's my favorite, but this is still
not his best. It is on, I'm looking at Amazon Prime Video, and I see that you can buy season 1 in HD for $21.99, or you can buy individual episodes in HD for $2.99.
Wow. I mean, you might as well go for the full season if you're at that price.
What a commit.
Many episodes are there in the season? Is it worth it?
13 episodes that are 22 minutes long each.
That's like 40 bucks right there.
Wow.
13 times 3, really, 39 bucks.
It's on Pluto TV and Tubi.
I don't know what those are. I'm old.
Those are those free things that always come up, and I'm wary of them, so I do not click.
Well, this is interesting. A little turn of events here. So I'm looking at season one. It's sitting at 4.5 stars on Amazon, 99 reviews, and it's all available in HD. We talked about the price, but if you click to season two, that price, season two, drops down to $9.99.
Oh.
Episodes are $1.99, and there's only 8 of them, but they're only available in SD.
Man, that's a step backwards. Can you watch reviews. SD anymore?
Yeah, you need like one of those retro console upscalers, I think, to really get the pixel quality on his face and everything.
With the RF modulator hooked up. Get the bunny ears. We got to adjust the picture.
I can't allow a conversation about Steven Seagal to go by without mentioning or at least checking. Doing a carrot check. Have you seen Steven Seagal eating a carrot?
No, I have not.
Oh, well, Google image search Steven Seagal carrot. I'll only give you the context that he visited a dictator in Belarus and was gifted a carrot that he proceeded to munch on, and it's just the most... Well, you just have to see it.
Okay. That's... He's just chewing a carrot.
Yeah.
Oh, he's going for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's... I'm going to have to download this picture now, aren't I?
That's going to have to be the episode image, yeah.
I guess so, son of a bitch.
It's a couple guys having a chew, you know?
Steven Seagal's carrot. That's the name of the episode.
So we totally derailed any conversation about the game, but I'm loving where this is going.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell happened. We kind of just broke the show. Purnell usually does that.
I did it, and I did it in much fewer words.
You did. Purnell would have gone on 25 minutes about the carrot. He would have talked about carrot cakes, yeah. And it somehow would have transferred to video games, and Elden Ring would be brought up somehow.
Somehow.
Yeah. Have you played Elden Ring?
No, I haven't played anything for a very long time. My backlog is just... it's insane. I'm actually really dying to play the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe.
Oh yeah,
I'm a massive fan of the original, going back to the original mod, and the fact that they've maybe found a way to make it even better, or just having more new Stanley Parable is something I'm really psyched about. So nice. Maybe once all these content updates are done, I'll finally get like a weekend.
I'm over here replaying Final Fantasy IX, so you know I'm hopeless.
Enjoy it.
Are you gonna get Enjoy that 10-year achievement in Stanley Parable?
Oh yeah, I think. Well, the first one had a 5-year achievement.
Yeah,
I think
now they made it 10.
Oh, it's 10 now.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, hey,
unless you want to cheat, like some of our some of the people hanging out in chat who just took their system offline and. Changed the clock internally to 10 years ahead and fired up the game and like, oh, free achievement.
I mean, you didn't earn it. Not how is that not in the spirit of things, you know, to cheat that way?
You didn't earn that achievement. Against,
you know, just because the narrator said so, you know, outsmart the game. I love that.
I love how the devs commented on it and said they were disappointed, and people are like, they bought it. Like, people think I'm serious when I'm like, you're a cheater. Like, no, I'm not. Fucking serious, it's a fucking video game, why would I care? It's just fun. It's to bust people's balls.
It doesn't hurt anyone else, right?
No, it's just funny to rag on people, the cheaters. Yeah. Filthy cheaters.
It always like seems to me like these games that kind of deal with like that meta narrative type of, you know, situation, it always ends up that you have to do some kind of like thing to your computer or something to like outsmart it. So like that's why I usually don't play those kind of games, because I'm like, I'm not that good with computers. I just want to play a video game. I'm sorry. I was about to go into major spoiler territory there for a different game, but I'm not going to now. I caught myself. Boy. But yeah.
So achievements.
Let's just say it's happened a few times.
I know. Yeah. I know our friend Carnage in chat already completed all the achievements for Rift Tracks. Are you guys looking into doing any title updates with new achievements for people?
I think so. I think you know, that's something that another piece of feedback we got from What the Dub was your achievements kind of suck, because there was like a, you know, complete 70 games or something ridiculous that was just, you know, only the dedicated were really going to do it. And this time around, we tried to make it a little bit more accessible for people to get the trophy, to, you know, get 100% on the game. And yeah, definitely interested in keeping it going. And if we can tie it to new content, that would be, that'd be awesome.
I have to brag on myself a little bit here, because I'm not an achievement guy. I'm a Nintendo fan, and so I don't care about achievements. So I come upon them organically. That is to say, I never check the list first. And completely by accident, I got the achievement of getting zero votes in a game of Rift Tracks. I was less funny than everyone. And yeah, and I came upon that.
You were proud of that zero.
I was quite proud, yeah.
Yeah, it's like my condolences, but also congratulations. Like,
I mean, I came back and won a game, so it's yeah, it's no big deal.
Which is also an achievement.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, like, it's no good to be just like near the bottom. If you can completely bottom out, that's an achievement. And then, of course, if you end up completely on top, then that's also an achievement. But yeah, both of those are things.
Yeah, Chris, it's impressive. I've seen people try for that achievement and they can't get it.
So yeah, I got that one. Now I'm actually going to look at the achievements for the first time. I got the game loaded up. Let's see. How many did I get?
What are some of the more fun achievements that you guys came up with for this one?
Oh, let me see here. So I have to, I don't know them off the top of my head, so let me just pull it up.
We're all just sitting here Googling the achievement list. Yeah.
Welcome to the Google show. Yeah, I mean, a lot of these, again, we're trying to make it easier on folks, like write your first riff. You know, I think the ones that I love are, and maybe other people hate, is like when Riffbot wins a game. You know, that feels like, that stings a little bit, because it's like, wow, we all really did bad. So I kind of love that. The sound effects, anything with a sound effect where it's just like you just submit that, or if you win around with one word, a single word, I think that's a challenge. And I've seen some really good ones. I can't remember the clip, but the streamer, the guy that he was playing with, just wrote, like, don't. And the context of it was just, like, flawless. It's like, that's a perfect example of getting that trophy. It's just, like, nice. Pick the right word.
Oh, and I also wanted to point out that I love that the get no votes for an entire game is called the Norman Krasner. And I totally did the sigh at the end of that, too.
Carnage in chat, yeah. Saying he see a funny one where it was just literally the sound effect. Bruh. I've had some fun with a reverberating fart. That's a good one.
That's classic. An iconic sound effect, you know.
Fart with reverb. So good. So good. And having different languages for the text to speech has led to some surprisingly funny results.
Yeah, that is one of the things that we did with What the Dub, because getting a translation for the subtitles, it's very expensive. And with What the Dub, we didn't really know if this formula would kind of translate internationally. So at least allowing the players to kind of dub, or in this game, riff in their own language, you know, sure, go for it. You know, if you can get around the English subtitles. So that's something we've had in there. But yeah, if Google's technology, as brilliant as it is, if you just enter in plain English text with a different language selected, it has a very, I'll say, unique accent for some of the languages. I've seen it used for comedic effect. I've seen it used and abused, as you can imagine. People,
yeah, like there's been some tasteless stuff done with them, but
yeah,
Which is, that's got to be a hard balance to see when you're watching people play this game. Is like, for the most part that I've seen, everyone has been cool, but there's always going to be someone to come along and just like fuck everything up, and not in a good way.
Right. And, you know, personally, this, just speaking for myself, I don't know that I could ever stream this game with, you know, just because like, I feel like if I'm going to play it with my friends and, you know, like when you have every friend group has their own kind of like language, their own in jokes, and some people can push the limits, some people can handle it, some people can't. So I think it's already kind of interesting to see people stream it, you know, and let some of their followers join them and have that kind of trust that they're not going to just hit you with something that is going to get you banned.
Having seen this happen with Drawful a lot, it's always just strangers that come in. They don't even make themselves known in chat because they don't want to get banned.
Yeah.
So they just like they just lurk and then they join the game and then throw in like, you know, a bunch of racist stuff or whatever. So,
dicks everywhere in Drawful.
Yeah. And
which is why we put in moderation feature. So if you have a mod, they can see everything and either reject it or submit it.
Okay, yeah. I did notice that, but nothing came up that I had to mod, so I did have that on. But so the profanity filter, I had turned it on for a couple of things, and of course it bleeped out the usual suspects, but does that also filter out racist content? I mean, as well as it can, obviously.
It filters out probably too much, and this is something we had... We spent probably too much time talking about it because, you know, we landed with all or none. Chances are if you need it on, you're playing in a family setting or, you know, you're streaming, you're monetizing your stream, whatever it is, and you just don't want to tolerate it. And what I could see from that list, it's like every iteration, every off spelling, you know, it's like F-U-K.
Oh, yeah,
the letter
U.
Like, it gets it knows that you're trying to get around
F-U-K.
You know, part of me, I was going to say, is like, at times it feels a little, like, you kind of almost want, like, a all, some, or none. And the some being, like, maybe just, you know, people want to say fucking shit, you know, like, or whatever, ass, you know, just like, just give that.
Those are fine.
But when we looked at adding to that some list, you're like, well, it's so, you know, this is so subjective.
Where's the line? And, yeah.
Yeah. What's cool for what I might be cool with dropping an F bomb, but some people might be, oh, I don't, you know, I'm not cool with that. Or, you know, so yeah, it's really an all or nothing kind of filter. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So I was kind of wondering about like, oh, is there, you know, about doing like a sum version, but I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that wouldn't, you know, one person's sum is a, you know, a different person's, is different from another person's sum.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I think we like played with like, what is it? Like the, you know, George Carlin's list, you know, the seven, seven dirty words. But I don't know that everybody knows what that means. And there's some words on there that are even like, I don't know if this is quite as universal as we think it is. So
yeah, that's from like the 70s, right? Like,
yeah, I think he updated it.
Like, piss is on the list.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And like, I heard piss on Salute Your Shorts on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah. Sponge, the one character, says the thing that pisses me off in the one episode. That's stuck with me since childhood that they said piss on Nickelodeon in the 90s.
There is a speaking of instances where somebody suddenly cusses and it just sticks with you, like when you're not expecting it.
when Ugg broke the piss barrier.
I'm trying my best to stop myself from even going into this story, but now it's too late. Okay, so in the 90s, in like the kind of mid to late 90s, when everybody was like kind of like when kids entertainment was kind of overrun by like bizarro, like Jim Henson, like type productions. Cause I guess Labyrinth did so well, but like then they would come out with something like, you know, Theodore Rex or something. In that time. Oh, and Ninja Turtles, of course, with their movies.
Yeah.
they came out with this film slash toy tie-in called Warriors of Virtue, which was kangaroos. It was people in kangaroo puppet gear that was like, you know, a kind of noble kung fu quest kind of movie, of course, with a kid from the real world involved. And anyway, yeah, just like...
I never heard of this.
Yeah, look it up. Warriors of Virtue. I will never forget it. I only watched it once, rented it from Blockbuster, and I can't forget it. Right at the end of the film, like at the emotional climax of like the kid talking, you know, to the villain or whatever, right before everything, you know, starts to turn around, the kid just like, as a non sequitur, because it's like, you know, do you have any final words or something like that? There's a setup like that, and the kid says, "Shit happens," and then the bad guys are like looking at each other like, "Shit happens?" Like they're confused by it, and they just keep repeating the word shit in a PG movie with puppets and stuff.
What?
I swear to God it exists. But yeah, that has always stuck with me, and I don't remember anything else about the film except how bad it looked. But
yeah, I'm going to have to... There's so much shit I have to look up after this episode. Steven Seagal's Lawman, Warriors of Virtue.
Just do an image search of Warriors of Virtue and look at these terrible kangaroo costumes and you'll... Yeah. It's not great. 1997. Wow. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, you can see like, what they're going for. They're clearly going for like this, you know, Ninja Turtles labyrinth, you know. They even have the different warriors color coded. One of them's blue, one of them's green, yellow, red, etc.
Wow.
That's like pretty that's pretty disturbing.
I want to say that that film is what killed the Ninja Turtle knockoff like
genre
industry. The machine that was coming out with, you know, your biker mice from Mars and your street sharks and your, you know, all the others.
All right, Jim, it's your job to tell Mike Nelson to get on this movie.
I know.
Warriors of Virtue, Riff Tracks needs to happen.
I mean, if they can afford the rights, I'm sure this is an expensive franchise. You know? This good candidate for Just the Jokes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if they do it, I will totally watch that film again, but not until then. But yeah, it's just, I forgot to actually check the rating because I think it was PG.
I mean, PG in the 90s and 80s used to be a lot more loose than it is. Like, I remember Spaceballs was PG and Rick Moranis says fuck at the end of it.
It's true.
Fuck, it's even true. In the future, nothing works.
Yeah. At the, there's a
PG.
Yeah.
PG. There we go. Also, Jabberwocky, the Terry Gilliam film, one of his first films, I think, besides the Monty Python stuff, full frontal female nudity in that, and pretty extensive gore, and just like, but you know, literally like buckets of blood getting poured on people, you know, from off camera murdering, and yeah, that was a PG film.
Nice for the kids.
Yeah, for the little ones.
And so, speaking of things that people shouldn't buy, there is something that they should buy, and that is Riff Tracks the game. How is this game only $10?
You know, we're about to go into a recession, man. You know, we're just trying to meet people halfway. No, it's yeah, no, I think we're trying to I like offering a lot of value in the game. Just like what the dub, you know, was $7.99. I think with the Riff Tracks name on it and all the content that they're bringing, yeah, just felt like a fair price.
I also feel like, you know, because Riff Tracks operates on like a Kickstarter system, I feel like maybe some of this stuff's a little bit already paid for by fans from the past, you know, like, so you don't have to reacquire the rights to like these movies and stuff.
Yeah, true. Yeah, the movie rights were all kind of baked in. The writing and performing is all brand new, but yeah, you know, I think like we're just trying to make having a good time as easy as possible. So, you know, if you got some friends and you're looking to have a party game, you got a couple hours to kill, you know, yeah, we want this to be the go-to thing where it's like, you got $10, you know. I think if you played just with the clips that we have in now, so this would go up with the 100 clips that we have coming out, but if you're playing like on average with what the dub data we saw, like most people play a four-player game. So with 250 or so clips, you're playing a 10-round game. It evens out to like 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours.
Nice. I'm so really excited to play this with friends, by the way. I haven't had any over, but once I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it things.
Feels like for $1 an hour, you know, you could do a lot worse. You know, that was kind of our motivation, is just make it easy for people to jump in and start playing. And we didn't want the price to be the thing that held them back from, you know, we want this to be the gateway riff, right?
Yeah.
You know, get them in.
Well,
once the riff's in your bloodstream, you can't get it out.
Very true.
And I mean, you know, for things like, you know, the Jackbox games or whatever, like I'd never buy those for more than $10 because they go on sale so frequently. I'm just like, I wait for it to dip down to like $7 or $8. And I'm like, all right, I'll pick it up now.
Yeah. When we looked at the standalone Jackbox games, just as a price comparison, most of those are about $9.99 for like Drawful or just the one singular game. So yeah. It felt like we're kind of right in that sweet spot.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's totally. I mean, I was the one that reviewed this game, and I was telling people, yeah, definitely buy this. Not only to have it, because it's great, but also to facilitate more of it. Like, you know, we need more of this to come out, because, you know, MST3K, having been around since the 80s, and, like, this is almost this is, like, the first video game of this ilk, right? Like, of, like, that straight up is using that kind of world.
Yeah.
Like directly in a video game. I mean, besides, of course, your other game.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think they did like a game in the 90s. They did like some clips, or they had like a cameo type thing. I can't remember the name of it, but they mentioned it on one of the interviews. Like, yeah, back in the 90s, we did like a FMV game, or we did like the menus or something. They voiced it. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I've never heard of that.
Never heard of that either. I'm going to have to look that up, too.
Yeah.
This was like the first real official, game that these guys have done. So hopefully
yeah,
more.
I absolutely feel like the MST3K must have dipped their toe in, like, you know, something on DOS or something back in the day. Not DOS, but maybe like, you know, yeah, like you say, Windows and FMV and stuff. That does sound pretty correct. Also, they did do a PlayStation kind of like special, like demo disc or something like that, where they riffed some video game FMVs from like that era.
Oh, really?
I remember getting that issue just for the riff, the MST content on the disc.
I watched it some other way. I want to say it was maybe a DVD extra somewhere or something like that. It's hard to tell, but I remember watching it because I remember seeing like somebody asking, I don't know if it was Mike Nelson or something, but this is like back in the 90s, if like riffing video games was a thing. And they were kind of like, I don't know, because, you know, video games are so much different than films and stuff. And it's like, you know, now Twitch is a thing where it's like 50,
it's nothing,
you know,
but people riffing games.
Yeah, exactly. It's like 70% of the population is now riffing games like regularly. So, I mean, I'm not saying he didn't say no. He just said that's something that they would have to like think about. But like, yeah, I just thought that was another thing that stuck with me.
And now they are the game.
They are. It's come full circle. We've closed the loop.
We have closed the loop. I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything about the game you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
No, I think, you know, we're excited. We've only been out about 10 days, but launch was great. You know, anyone that's thinking about playing or is playing, you know, please continue to do so. We look forward to adding more clips, hopefully next week, and then some more in June and July, as well as we're looking to expand some of the Pick-A-Riff audio as well, so that will continue to get larger and larger as we add more and more clips and riffs. We got a Discord going, as everyone does, but it's a great way if you're looking for a quick pickup game. We have some people playing there who are always hosting, if you don't want to join like a streamer and you just want to play with some folks. they're all good people. So stop on by and yeah, let us know if we've missed something or if you broke the game. We're always down. I think, like, you know, 90% of the changes we've made that haven't been, you know, kind of like bug fixes have just been suggestions from fans. So, nice. You know, we're not too precious about anything. if there's a better way we could be doing things that makes the game better, easier, funnier, whatever, let us know.
Well, how can people keep up to date with you and keep in contact with you and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, we're at Wide Right Games on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and our website, widerightgames.com, where you can find a link to the Discord and all those other good things.
Sweet. Jim, I love having you on the show. It is always good times. We are going to let you get going. We have a lot more show we got to take care of. Everyone else, stick around. We are going to take a quick break. We will be right back with the Party Cast and all those other fun people. Chris, stick around. You'll be part of that as well.
Oh, Jim, I see.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, you're not getting off that easy. Jim, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
No, but thanks so much for having me on again. I look forward to coming back. I'd love to drag one of the guys with me, you know, of the Rift Tracks team. Maybe we can get Kevin or Bill to join next time.
Sweet. I will make whatever schedule has to happen on my end, if you can arrange that.
Yeah, I'll be available for that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Jim at Wide Right for coming on and chatting about Rift Tracks.
Oh, God, Wide Right. Ugh.
What?
That's like infamous in Buffalo sports lore.
Oh.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Those two words. Sorry. Fuck this company. Get out of here. They're from Buffalo. I can't imagine they would just... continuously, whatever, go on. Well,
Tim is here, Purnell is here, Brooke is here, and Chris, you're still around. How's everybody doing?
Still here.
I didn't realize Tim has such a vendetta against that unexpected name that popped up.
Hey, I'm just representing my city, you know.
Hey, and how? Just, all learning something today. I mean,
let's face it, that definitely wasn't the worst thing that happened to the city this past weekend.
No, certainly not.
True. Man.
Well, podcast sorry over.
Yeah, that's the end of the show. Thanks, everyone. It's been a good episode. We didn't get anything done. No. Oh, shit. So, anybody want to talk about anything, or are we going right into reviews this week? What's going on? Who has a tangent? Purnell, do you have a tangent? Do something.
Hey, I got one. I'll lay one on you.
Let's hear it, Tim. What's up? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
No. Oh, not that. No, I'm not going to talk about that. I live in Buffalo, for those that might not know. So obviously there was a horrific shooting this weekend in a neighborhood that I am very familiar with. I have a friend who lives right near that Tops. I have a friend who was on the street a block away Facebooking what the hell's going on at Tops right now.
Jesus.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to pretend like I live there or that's like, you know, my particular neighborhood or community. I live just outside the city now, but like it was very close and very familiar. And, you know, people I know knew the people that were shot there. So it hit extremely close to home. Yeah. And my poor wife, who was like frantically texting me that afternoon, and I'm just cooking dinner, not looking at my fucking phone. She's just like, "You didn't go to Tops, did you?" Like, no, I don't go to Tops, generally speaking. Anyways, the real tangent is, man, I had a ripper of a Rogue Legacy run right before we got on here, and I feel pretty good about that.
Ooh, how'd you do? How far are you?
I finished. So obviously, like my progress has been stunted by having to like review games for you people. But you know,
are you a wrestling heel now with the you people?
People, you hear those words, you know I've gone bad. But yeah, no, I just cleared the fifth area and the fifth boss, and you know, obviously walked out with a whole bunch of loot and feeling pretty fucking good about myself. That fifth area is a son of a bitch. Oh my god, holy shit!
The sun tower, is it?
Yeah, the sun tower. It's just like there's no like. Yeah, there's like no chance you're getting an easy run of it. Like, oh, I found the boss room early, or, you know, oh, I found some, like, there's one teleporter. It's going to be at the top at the boss room. And other than that, you got to platform your fucking ass off to get up there. Like, more than that game has demanded of you to that point. And yeah, felt real good. Did it with a chef.
Nice. Didn't expect that one.
For the rest of us, context, what's a chef? What makes a chef special?
A chef cooks food?
Yeah, the chef's ability, he cooks food that will heal and restore your mana. The weapon is a frying pan that sets things on fire and will also knock back projectiles. See, the twist was I got to the boss room, and then as I usually do, I went back to some earlier areas just to kind of like farm up some health and like refill my cooking pot. When I found a pair of boxing gloves, and the boxer had been doing really, really, really well for me up to that point in that area. So I was like, you know what? I am now a boxing chef. And that did it because I think it was still applying the fire, the burn effect that the chef comes with inherently. And yeah, I smoked them.
Wow.
It felt really good. It's a lot of fun. I find that for me, like, I'm not sticking to one, like, class. Like, I'm switching between them depending on the area. Just some seem better suited for certain areas and certain bosses. And, yeah, the game's great. So now I'm on the last biome. And, yeah.
Nice. Very nice. I am on the fourth boss on New Game Plus One.
Nice.
So I beat it once around. I'm going through it again. I love the modifiers that you can add to the game once you beat it. It expands it so much, and I can't stop playing it. I had a run where I got like 50 grand.
Nice.
I loved it. It was so good. Finding the right mix of traits to just give you a shitload of money is so fun.
Yeah. I just kind of like the fact that this is like one of the games where I was like, oh, Rogue Legacy 2, I should buy that. No, stop buying things. Don't buy that till later. And that's the one you guys like, this is so amazing. Gotta play it. But how? How did that happen? I don't know. But now I want to buy the damn game too.
No, you should play Rogue Legacy 2.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I can see where there's room for it to, like, you to keep playing well beyond, you know, one playthrough. And, yeah, it sounds like they borrowed the modifier idea from Hades, and that's great. And just keep going around.
Hell yes. Should we get to reviews?
Do that thing.
Do that thing. Tim, you ready?
Yep. Oh, shit. That's right, because I got to go first.
Yeah, you do. first game tonight is Cotton Fantasy, developed by Success and Studio Sizensen, published by Innen Games, released May 20th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. Something sinister is in the making. The willows are vanishing from Fairyland, and the Fairy Queen asks Silk to seek the witch Nada de Cotton for help. For a lifetime, all you can eat willow supply, as she has an insatiable craving for them, Cotton is willing to help out her old friend and embark on another adventure together. Tim, what's going on in Cotton Fantasy?
Hang on. What?
Cotton is agreeing to help for an all-you-can-eat willow supply because she has an insatiable craving for willows.
For context, see all of my reviews of like all the other Cotton games, because that's always the plot.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah, I was going to say, I have actually not played a ton of Cotton games. I actually played a PlayStation 1 release, like, in the 90s. Well, I guess it would have been the 2000s. But not really touched Cotton since. And I am to understand this is like the first.
The
this
feel, is like the fabric of our lives.
I can't believe you took that from me. Use
musically.
I believe. Correct me if wrong. This is like the first fully new Cotton in a very long time. Like the other one that came out recently was kind of a remake.
Yeah, I think all the ones that have come out so far have been remakes.
This brand new game from the long-standing Cotton series sets the stage for another fantastic adventure. So brand new. Cool.
Brand new. Yeah, I mean, it looks it, you know, graphically speaking, like, I think it looks like the look of it, it looks really nice. It doesn't look like, you know, it's not some updated game from 20 years ago. Like, this is brand new looking. So anyways, yeah, horizontal scrolling shmup game where you are a witch on a broom or various other characters. There's 6 characters to choose from in this game, and they each have there's some different play styles packed in there. At your base level, when you're playing as the eponymous Cotton, you get in there, you're shooting, these gems will pop up, which will both change your primary shot, and they will stock magic spells that you can unleash by charging your shot and then releasing it across the stage. And these gems are popping up like all willy-nilly, like crazy. And if you shoot them, they like change color. So it's actually kind of tricky to like maintain a single shot type sometimes when there's just like gems popping up all over the screen and you're still trying to shoot enemies. Not really complaining. It's just fun. But, you know, if you're paying attention, you can keep hold of that. You also get bombs with some of the characters. But, yeah, you go through a prologue level, and then that breaks out into an overworld map sort of deal where you can just pick your stage, what stage you want to go to from there. And there's, like, 6 or 7 initially once you get out of that prologue that you can start jumping between. And just kind of play the game in the order that you choose. I think it looks really nice. It's, just really nice drawn, like, polygonal characters and models, and it's just nice to look at. It reads really well on the screen, like your shots versus the enemy shots. Like, things do get busy because, like, when you use your charged up magic spells and it hits enemies and bullets, like, those explode into little thingamadoos you got to pick up to bring your score up. But it looks good and it runs really smooth. But like I said, it's got like a few different characters in the game. There's a few, 3 of them kind of fall into that same witch archetype. Where you're picking up the gems and casting different spells. There's another character who, her life is a timer. She's a time-based character, so there's a timer in the side of the screen that's constantly going down. And if you get hit, it goes down more. And if you pick up gems, it goes up a tiny little bit. I think it could go up a little bit more, because that character's kind of tricky to use. There is the guest character, Kawase, from the Umihara Kawase series.
Sweet.
Yes, she is riding around. She is really fun to use. She's riding on a frog. She has nautical-based shots, and you use her fishing pole to snag enemies and then shoot them back.
Perfect.
Yeah, just like your Kirby there. She's a lot of fun. I'm totally blanking on the... she's like a robot girl. And she powers up by if you narrowly miss enemies or attacks, like if they just graze by you, your weapon will get stronger and you'll get a force field that will actually block bullets that will hit you. So you are incentivized to fly dangerous with her. And I think it's great that, you know, it's not just a matter of like, oh, you know, a lot of times in shooters, it's like, oh, they have different like shot patterns, you know? Okay. But in this, like, you know, some of the characters, they play really differently from one another and make you think about things and approach the stages a lot differently. And I really like that. That was a lot of fun to play around with. You also get like a training mode in there where you can just kind of pick your stage and your character and some other modifiers on there to just like practice the stage with the character. And from there, there's just like leaderboards and some basic options. But it's a really fun shmuppy game.
Cool. Is it worth $40?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's brand new. It's not an update. It looks good. It plays well. The characters, different characters add a lot of value to it. There's, of course, increasing difficulty levels for, you know, what heights of insanity you want to inspire to. I think it's pretty good.
Cool. And for the people who are worried, it is 2.3 gig on the Switch. I figure we could start mentioning Switch file install sizes on some of the titles, okay, because it matters to some people. You only have so much space on the Switch.
Yep, I'm people.
Yeah, I knew you'd care, Purnell.
You have a problem, Purnell.
No, I am people.
You're a people with a problem. That's because you've got to keep everything installed on your Switch. You have plenty of space. People.
No, I'm out of space.
Yeah, because it's so full. You have how many gigs? How many gigs, Purnell?
There's a lot of gigs.
Okay, give us a number. Is it a triple-digit number, Purnell?
No, it's not a triple-digit number. It's more like a concert thing, you know. I'm still trying to pick up some bar shots, but I guess they're just not digging my vocal skills these days. It's just not bringing in the money like it used to.
Anyway, next game to talk
just
about.
Just delete some shit.
Next game to talk about is Seven Pirates H, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Felestella, published by East Asia Soft, released May 12th on the Switch for $39.99. Seven Pirates H is a traditional RPG focused on exploration and discovery with a gigantic dose of fan service thrown in. Purnell, tell us about your time with Seven Pirates H.
That's the description they gave?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Does the H stand for horny?
No, I'm sure if it's not for hentai, I don't know what the hell it stands for.
I mean, I could give a longer description. It's just like...
No, my job. That's my job.
Well, then get to it. What is this game?
So, it is a traditional JRPG, admittedly, like the description says. The idea, initially, is that you are basically a girl that goes by the name of Pirute. She is a pirate in a world full of monster girl pirates. And for reasons unexplained initially, a compass lands on her head one day. It's a special compass that leads her in the direction of quote-unquote treasure, and she wants to find the treasure to become, you know, basically the best pirate there is. This is not One Piece, I swear. This is Pirate Girls. So the way it works out is like you're on a boat, and you sail around this general map, and the map has a variety of different little tiny islands on it. If you stay up to one of the tiny islands, sometimes an event will occur that can lead to a few different discoveries, including things like boobykin. And I'll explain what that is later, too. But then there's also like main islands, which is where all the dungeons and such are located. And when you land on those, you go on a bit of an exploration run. This is where you'll have, you know, general battles. You'll meet other monster girl enemies that you'll meet up, befriend, or not so much befriend, and eventually some of them will even join your party, and you'll expand your party with other people. Pirate is a normal human, but apparently the other girls are all monster girls that join you, but they're all essentially becoming pirate friends of yours. Now here's where I get to the things that are not so traditional. The way this game works is you go into a battle with enemies, and enemies, rather than have like general elemental traits, they have pheromone traits, red, blue, and green. And even though they're called pheromones, they work similar to elements, where some are strong against others and weak against others. So you'll need to choose the girls with the right pheromone levels to fight the enemies with the right pheromone levels to do your best levels of damage. And as you beat enemies, you'll get two things. You'll get gold and not experience points, because unlike other JRPGs, you don't get experience in this game. You get H points in this game, or rather H extract. H extract is essentially, I consider it hentai points, because what else is H going to stand for in this game? I don't know.
Honkers.
But that's my guess. So what you do with H extract is, as you get a certain amount per character, you'll get an item after a battle called extract, specifically named for the character in question. Very early in the game, you meet a little, like a boy, a male monster seal character. And his specialty, apparently, is that he knows the secret to getting the characters to become stronger. And he does it, he knows that the secret is known as something called booby training. Because apparently, breasts have a lot of traits that I have never heard of in my freaking life. At least some of them. You've got height, size, softness, firmness, cleavage, and perkiness. And when you use the actual extract on the character, you go into something called booby training. You have to actually...
What the fuck is going on?
Hey, I'm going with this as straight face as possible, but this is literally the game.
This is what I said last week, how much I'm looking forward to hearing this review.
So, damn it, Chris! So, when you go into booby training, all those traits that I mentioned before exist for the character's breasts, and you have to actually manipulate the breasts using 10 motions per extract in order to alter those traits. And depending on how the traits are leveled out at the end, that determines the character's stats in attack, defense, and agility. So, you know, I mean, I don't remember all of them, because that's one of the biggest issues I have with the game, is that I have no idea how people remember what all these traits mean as far as character stats go. I just know that I think size increases your attack power but lowers your speed.
My soft, supple breasts means I can attack you harder.
Apparently, like there's like this whole like structure of like what the traits represent on the characters as far as their stats go. And honestly, if you do not use booby training, you will not get through the game. How do I know? Because I definitely hit a few roadblocks where I was like, crap, I got to go to booby training now, don't I? Because
we've all been there, I guess. We've all
been there. It happens with age.
And the other thing that booby training gives you is actual new skills. So if you don't booby train, you won't get new attacks either. So it's like whoop-de-doo. So as you're exploring the map, I mentioned earlier how you might find things like boobykin. The boobykin are actually these little creatures, but they're called boobykin. They do not resemble boobies at all, so that's nice at least. But they are, I guess, think of them as like ship spirits. If you've ever heard of like the clobakin or whatever the hell that thing is called, where it's like you're like the spirit of a ship. But essentially, they come in the form of like merchants, fighters, and something else. And depending on which ones you find, they will, depending on the number of them you find, rather, it will increase certain things. For example, the merchant will allow you to buy more items in the shop. The scholar, there we go. The scholar will give you like more side quests and bonus tips so that you can like learn more about how to play the game.
You said tips with a P, right?
I did.
Okay.
I did say tips with a P.
Okay.
Don't worry. Making I got a number sure. of you coming later where I'll say tits. And it's going to be 100% legit, which is hilarious.
I'm so happy.
And the last one is how you'll get certain skills in the game where they're, instead of being like the normal skills of the character, they're like booby skills. And when you use those, the booby can come out. They consider it booby can support, and they will help you. For example, there's a skill where you can change your pheromone type to a one that's more fitting for the character so you don't get their asses kicked by a walking penis monster. Because they're in the game. And that's pretty much the gist of the game. As you fulfill side quests and complete missions, you'll actually unlock more pieces of the map, which exposes the map that you're traveling on, which is how you find new islands and get to new events. And also, occasionally, random events will pop up on the map. That is pretty much the way you learn more about the characters' relationships with each other. They kind of have like decent characterizations. Oh, and I got to mention the one more thing, because believe it or not, booby training isn't the thing that really annoys me about the game, though it did kind of annoy me with the whole stat management part. The thing that annoys me the most is there's one other type of attack in the game that I've come across. It's called the Otan Charge. So Otan is the boy monster I told you about. Otan is a character that exists pretty much in every single Genkai Toki game. Those Monster Dungeon games I did back in the day on the show, he's in those. And he's in this one, too. But they decided they wanted to give him more of a prominent role than just actually training monster girl tits. So what they decided to do for him in this game is they gave him an attack called the Otan Charge. When you're in battle, he has a gauge in the upper left corner. It starts at zero. Every time you have an actual turn, it goes up a very, very small amount. However, if you want to charge it faster, you can actively choose Otan Charge in your skill list, and it'll go into like a touchy-feely mini-game where you have to like arouse the girls, because apparently that charges Otan. And it goes up faster and faster. And then once it gets to 100%, he basically explodes. You can guess what that's meant to represent. And he basically launches a huge Otan beam cannon that does a lot of damage to the enemies, and in some cases, that's the way you have to defeat them. Which means, if you hate the idea of charging Otan, tough shit, you're going to have to do it sometimes anyway. I'm not going to lie, if the minigame part weren't there, I probably wouldn't mind so much, because it's like, whatever. He charges up, or I can mash a button real quick and get it to charge up. Now he fires his joygasm, and everybody loses. And obviously it's not like gooey or nothing, but it's just still, it's clearly what it is. But I just hate the fact that they're like, hey, you got to do this thing. In order to do the thing, you got to do this mini game that you really don't want to do, but you got no real choice in the matter. So I just wanted to put that out there, because the weird thing about this game, all in all, is like,
oh, this is the weird thing coming up.
Yes.
Well, hey.
Gather around for the weird thing about this
game. Well, I gotta
prepare yourself. This game gets weird.
The thing about it is, like, I gotta play it straight. Like, they know who they make these games for. Like, I can't be like, the whole game is hard. I'm playing it as straight as I can. Long and hard. There we go. Bam. I have to get it out there. Now, the actual point of, thank you, sir. So, the last point is that the thing about it is, like, I see, as far as the game goes, it's not a bad game. Like, it's actually fun to play. The battles are fun. The music is good. I just wish I'd have to do the Otan Charge, and I wish I didn't have to care so much about the bust parameter stat configuration, because honestly, what I ended up doing when it was time to do bust parameters, which is probably why I've got my ass kicked on some of the boss fights, is I would just go in there and just like randomly activate different traits and just see how they turn out. Also, fun fact, the breasts actually do represent what they look like in the game, too. So if you get ones where they're just like extremely high perky stats and nothing else, you just have these freaking torpedoes on a character. It looks ridiculous. But that's kind of part of the joke, I guess. I don't know. But aside
real
from the Otan
time
Charge,
titty management.
Oh, actually, the funny thing, I think I did a review of a game like that years ago on the show where you pretty much had to do that too. And it was Porn Studio Tycoon. That's what that was. Okay. Back to this review, though.
This has precedent.
Although the game is honestly a fun game to play. Like, it's not a bad title. It's just, you need to know what you're getting when you go into it. Like, if you see the cover and you're just like, oh, cute girls going on a pirating adventure. Well, that's partially right. but there's other elements of the game that you might not be signing up for. And if you don't know those exist, well, you might not be having a good time when you play the game you spent cash on. But hearing the elements I already described, if you're like, I'm not put off by that, then it's good to know that the actual game is a solid title as well. And you will have fun playing it. So
$40, what's your verdict?
I honestly thought I'd buy it. As long as you know what you're getting into, it is a solid title and worthy of your play.
And it's 1.2 gig.
So you played it on Switch?
Yes, sir.
Any frame rate issues at all?
Mm-mm. The thing about it, like, okay, one thing good worth noting and why there really aren't any, because this game is actually a port of a game that came out on the Vita back in like 2015 or 16 that just never got sent to the West. Okay. Until this version.
I just always like to make sure, because sometimes Compile Heart and Idea Factory, those games don't port so well to the Switch versus like the PS4. So that's good. Because, yeah, you know, might be considering which version I'm going to be pre-ordering right now.
Did it get released on another system?
I don't know.
I think it's just Switch, but I might be wrong.
Okay.
My notes just mentioned the Switch.
Yeah.
Anyway, something that's on all platforms, next game to talk about is Soundfall, developed by Drastic Games, published by Noodle Cake, released May 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. You are a guardian of harmony, a musical genius transported to the world of Symphonia by the composers to battle the forces of Discord. Venture out solo or with up to four players to fight your way through the corrupted timberlands of Symphonia, eradicating the Discordians and restoring harmony to the environment. Tim, tell us about your time with Soundfall.
Okay, I have to stop. Click. I need something to cleanse my brain while all that was going on. anyways, this game. Okay, so this game is a like rhythm game, like twin stick shooter with loot in it, basically, sort of, kind of. I think that's the best way to summarize it. I was a little bit, wondering, like, oh man, am I gonna have to like preface this review with a disclaimer, because you know we know some of the people that have music on this game, like Danimal and Stem Engine. They were literally on the show last week. Yeah. But there is a lot of music in this game, so like the totality of their contribution is like maybe 5-6% of the music. So we'll just say they're the worst part of the game and push them off to the side. Fuck those guys. Nah, I'm
kidding. Yeah, fuck you, Grant. theme song.
Well, it's for Dan, it's a couple of his older songs that I'm already on record as enjoying, so I can't lie my way through that. And the new ones seem good as well. But anyways, doesn't matter. There's a ton of music in this game. So drops you into this world, your character, Melody. The world of sound, and the idea is that each stage is a different song on the soundtrack, and you are playing through that song to destroy the Discordians, not to be confused with the application, in order for the song to be birthed into the world as a complete song. So that is what you are doing. You are journeying through all the different realms of Soundopolis. That's not what it's called.
Symphonia. I just
can't remember that one. Yeah.
there's tales about that world, I hear.
Yes, they are. They're some 20 years old at this point. And each kind of world has its own musical motif. Classical or metal or horns, stuff like that. Each stage is about, and it's about like 10 actual levels, though if you go into like the free playlist, which I'll get to in a moment, like there's more songs designated for each area, so I'm not exactly sure if that's just kind of like extra bonus stuff or there's a way to unlock them that I'm unaware of at this time. But either way, you play through the game, and this kind of story unfolds as you are trying to find your way back into the real world, and you start bumping into other people you know from the real world who have also been transported to this world. And hey, you know what? They get music powers, too. So the way the game actually plays, your character, you get two different weapons, which are kind of like musical instruments or items adapted. They just shoot things. Basically, so you'll have like a keyboard in front of you and it's just like blasting out shots, but different weapons will have different shot types, and eventually like different effects and affinities depending on like what kind of stage you're in or what enemies you're fighting. You get a melee attack. Well, you get a weapon, I guess I should say, because some characters' weapon is a bow and arrow and not a melee weapon. But and that's what sets the characters apart from one another, is whatever kind of weapon they get, because their weapon also dictates their super move. So your first character, she has a sword, so you just sword enemies, and the ultimate is like a spinning slash thing, and your next guy is like this metalhead dude whose weapon is a giant axe, guitar axe, get it? So that does. That's like a charged melee strike in a line. But his ultimate is really cool because it's called the stage dive, and you can just like bound anywhere kind of within a certain radius. Like you pick the landing, the point of impact, and you'll jump over it. And as you play through the levels, you will collect loot. It's not like loot vomit. It's not like every enemy is spitting out a bunch of like useless crap that you're not going to need. Like you usually only get like a 2 or 3 pieces of gear per level, sometimes more if like you explore off to the side. But you're guaranteed one at the end. So you pick up new loot, the numbers go up, your characters get stronger. You will also gain experience when you clear a level, to make your character stronger. Each level has like a intensity setting, which is basically the difficulty. And, it, you know, you start out on like the novice one, but then once you hit level 10, it's like, hey, we can bump you up to a 2-star difficulty, which is not messing around because the enemies do more damage, have more health and scale up to fight against you, but you get better loot and more experience. Now, when you're actually playing the game, you have to execute in line with the rhythm. It is a rhythm game. So there will be like a little metronome thing at the bottom of the screen that just kind of is a visual representation of where the beat is lining up. And you are incentivized to pull the trigger for your weapons on the beat. You are incentivized to dash. You have a dash ability on the beat. So it's like when you hit on the beat, it is visually different. It's visually distinct for every move you do. Like you'll get a much bigger, colorful blast out of your weapons than if you hit off the beat, and then it's just kind of these little pea shots out that don't do as much damage and just don't make you feel good as a person. and the dash is like invincible when you hit it on the beat. So
I don't think it works off the beat. I don't think you could dash off beat.
It does, but it works really poorly. Like you move like a little bit. and that's like, there's these little kind of dash adds through the level, which kind of will like shoot you over a gap or something like that. And you have to hit on the beat to use those, which is frustrating sometimes when I just can't get on it for whatever fucking reason. But either way, in combat, you dash, you will be invincible while you dash. So it'll be like, shoot, like, I don't know, like you can get into a really nice, like kind of groove in this game. Like once you settle into it, that is, I don't want to say mindless in a bad way, but you can kind of like really like relax in sink into the game and just kind of
zone out.
Zone out like in the best way, in the way that you're looking to do in a game. It just kind of, and that's good for a rhythm game that you're not sitting there like thinking of like, oh my God, what buttons do I need to hit like in time with the music? Like I'm hitting the wrong prompt. It's not keeping, you know, this enemy needs this button, this enemy needs that button, but there's just these enemies over here. Like they keep it pretty simple with like, okay, you're just worrying about you're pulling your trigger, using your weapon, and dashing, and that's it. And it's just like shoot, shoot, dash over here, shoot, shoot, dash, shoot, dash, melee, dash, shoot, shoot, shoot. And that's just enough to let you just kind of relax and sink into the game, and it just feels really quite good to play, I would say. Now, it does have a linear story progression to it, where you're playing through the story and going level by level by level, but at any point, literally any point, you can just slide over to the free play mode and pick whatever song you want to play out of the, you know, well over 100 songs in this game.
I think 140, they said.
That's great. That's what you want. Like if you just want a break for something, if you want to check out some other songs, you can just go over and play them. Will you succeed at going through the level that they are associated with? Maybe not. but I prefer that option to be available than having to like, oh, I have to go through the whole game to unlock everything on free play. Like I would much rather have it this way around where you could just jump around like however you want and go with it.
You don't have to jump through hoops to listen to your friends right away.
Yeah, no, you don't at all. You just hit like RB on the menu and that's it. It has multiplayer, which I didn't really get to try out. This does not a suitable, I think this would be too complex for my 7-year-old's brain, but it seems like up to 4 players can play.
Yep, and online.
And online. So that's good. That's great. And you know, just having that drip, drip, drip of loot, numbers go up, tons of music to choose from. You can play it with your friends. Like it, I think the look of it is good. Again, easy to read the screen and see, you know, the enemies and their shots. Like each level is kind of like bumping and grooving along with the song. It does, you know, if you're just sitting there playing level after level after level, like it does get a little bit repetitive sometimes, with just like I'll see parts of the levels kind of over and over again, and I'll be like, yeah, okay. And then, you know, the enemies, it's kind of a slow roll, I guess I'd say, for things to ramp up, but it's not the end of the world. And when you're just sitting there, you want to zone out and play, like that's fine. Or if you're kind of sick of the level you're on, you know what, just hit over, jump over to free play and just play whatever you want for a little bit, and you'll be fine.
Well, the game's sitting at $29.99. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's another. Sorry, it's another buy it. I have no anger with me this week.
None.
Very little. It's yeah, they're just two good games this week. It's just super solid.
Nice. Two and a half gig on the Switch.
All right, yeah.
There you go.
Is this right. Is that? It's not on Game Pass, is it?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay.
No.
All right.
Because I had to buy it.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was all worth right. it. So, all right, Tim, that is it for you. Do you have any final words?
I did, but I forgot what it was. Anyways.
God damn it, Tim.
Sorry. It's,
now you're pissing off Brooke. That's not good.
Sorry, Brooke. Wowzers.
Yeah. She's going to kick the shit out of you.
She's so fucking mad right now. You better come with some words prepared next week.
I'll have a great joke for next week, I promise.
Thank you. Thank you. All I'm right. calming down.
All right. Good night.
Night, Tim.
Night.
All right. Well, Brooke, we'll get you on the job since you're all riled up and ready to go. Next game to talk about is Dog's Donuts, developed by RoboDesar Games, published by Cubite Interactive, released May 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $3.99. Dog's Donuts is a physical-based puzzle game where you control a machine that shoots donuts, make the right adjustments, and find the best way to feed the adorable husky. Brooke and Chris, you both played this. Who wants to start?
I'll go ahead and start. I'll sound off here. I didn't totally understand what type of game this was when you shot the idea out to me of covering it. And the only game I can think of to compare it to that I have any experience in, I think this is the right name of the game I'm thinking of, but it's like Ultimate Chicken Horse or something. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Is that the game I'm thinking of where it's kind of similar, where it's like a physics simulator?
Ultimate Chicken Horse is more of like a competitive platformer where you design the platforms. It's not really physics based.
May I offer a comparison?
Yeah.
It's The Incredible Machine from like old ass DOS. It came out in 1993, where you had to build a machine with these parts. And it was the Rube Goldberg thing. It was just, you know. Doing exactly what we're doing in this game.
Cool. Well, you can see, like, Chris probably knows why I'm trying to compare it to Ultimate Chicken Horse over here. That really is like the closest I've gotten. Yeah. But basically, my impression of it was that it's actually a really good and exact like 2D physics simulator, if that's what we're calling it. I don't know what they call this subgenre of game. I loaded it up and I was like, I don't really know if this is for me, but a few levels in, I did start to get to me. I did start to enjoy it, just because I found that, like, you know, when we're throwing the donuts around, maybe I should go into the premise of this game. You have a dog on each level, and that dog loves donuts, and you have to feed him 5 donuts or you can't go to the next level. You have a donut cannon that will shoot out the donut, and then you'll put little machines and items in the level. It's almost like a level design type thing that will optimally bat around the donuts so that they end up in the dog's mouth, or if they end up close enough to the dog where he can kind of bend over and chomp it up. I'd never really played something quite like this before. At first, I was like, this doesn't really need to be on Switch. This is silly. But the more I tinkered with it, the more I was like, oh, man, if one donut doesn't make it to the dog and it hangs over here on the left, it maybe that donut will slowly like start rolling towards a different donut and then lob it up towards the dog. I think maybe 5 or 7 levels in was when I realized you could explode the donuts and the force of the donut explode. That was awesome for me. I had like 6 donuts all like in a little mound on the edge of the screen, and I blew one of them up and it like ricocheted the donuts around. Like, it actually, like, once you get in there a few levels in, it kind of like, it sounds weird to say this because this isn't exactly what I mean, but it kind of feels real. Like, the donuts have like a sort of weight to it. Have either of you played a game where this is like where it's trying to do what it's doing in this game but 3D? Because I haven't.
No, this is a distinct concept that I really haven't seen in a game before. But it's cute and it's adorable. And like you said, the bomb ones, I've like last ditch effort, just explode a pile of donuts, and I've ended up winning a level because they would just land.
That's awesome.
Conveniently where I needed them to land.
It's so cool. And then that got my hopes. I was like, oh, cool. I can use like the momentum, the force from the exploding donut to like replicate this experience. And like, that did not work for me. Like, it's just so like, I don't know how to describe it, but like, it's kind of like exact where the donut is going to fall. And then you can try to half ass like an accident that worked on a previous level. And it's very hard to sort of get those happenstance little lucky little things to happen again. You really have to kind of plan for it. It was a trip. I ended up liking this a lot more than I thought I would. And when I bugged you for the price earlier, I was actually kind of flabbergasted. Like, we could talk more about price in a little bit after Chris gets to talk about it a bit. But I thought it was really neat. I'm actually going to play more of it after this. I just thought it was really cool.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, like I said, it's basically The Incredible Machine, which is a huge hit game because it really like kind of got you to experiment with like different pieces and what they do. And like you kind of think outside the box because, yeah, it's this dog. You want some donuts and the world is in his way. and yeah, I agree with this. Brooks' feeling on it for sure. Like it's, you know, doesn't seem like much at first. And then as it gets more complex, you know, it eases you into it, which, you know, considering the game only has 40 levels, apparently, I was like, this feels like it's maybe easing a little too slowly, but ooh, I don't know. No. Maybe it really ramps up.
I was struggling up, before the tutorial was over.
Same.
The tutorial is technically the first 12 stages, and I was struggling near the end of those 12.
Dude, me too. Yeah. I think level 7 is when they have like the thing that attaches it. But I was stuck on the like baby's first two string boards at the same time level. Like that, I do not. Even, I was probably on that for like an hour. You guys, like I'm not.
Oh, wow.
I've never done anything like that before.
Well, and you think
that would mean that I got frustrated with it and I didn't like it, but actually that was the level where I was like, dang, I think I liked it. Even though it gave me so much trouble, it kind of also showed me what the game has to offer. And, you know, being stuck on that level so long, like that's when the donuts and the weight of the donuts started feeling real to me. And I was like,
oh, the donuts are the only real thing. So like, but that's what I like about these kind of games is that, you know, the physics are so consistent that it's like you really do kind of get to genius your way through some things, you know, and it really makes you feel like quite good when you really, you know, figure it out. And or even better when you figure out a way that you're like, oh, I don't think the game wanted me to do this.
Yeah.
And but anyway, yeah, so I'm going to come in with the complaints, minor though they are. For one, the game's like not super clear on doing things like, you know, raising like the intensity of like a spring or whatever.
That
like,
is,
you know,
true.
You sit there and place like, you know, you do the spring level like 50 times and you're like, oh, I actually have to highlight it and press this other button. And like, you know, the controls could have been a little tighter, I think. But
yeah.
I didn't play it in touchscreen mode, though. So maybe that's where it is. But the other thing is that, and this is maybe just a me thing, but you know, like audible sensitivity people, like pay attention. I cannot stand to hear that dog munch on those donuts. That's the worst sound effect to my ears.
Okay.
It's that wet lip smacking, like, and you hear it 5 times a level minimum.
So I can ended see up, it. I have a friend who hates that noise, like in real life, so much that our whole friend group has to be like on it. Like, I understand that's got to be really grating. I thought it was a funny, cute sound effect, but I can see how that's like. That's no lie. It's at least 5 times per level, and it is quite a distinct lip smacking of a dog eating.
You know, it's not like one of those things that like, I can't stand to hear people chew. Everybody has to sit at a different table from me, but No, it's just like it's some audio tics do get to me, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
It's like a case by case basis thing.
I think the shovel sucks in this game. Trying to use the shovel is just pain. I couldn't get it to do what I wanted. It was trying to do it on analog stick was rough. Brooke, I don't know if you had a chance to try it on touchscreen.
No, I just did analog, and I mean, I got it to work, but a lot of this stuff was pretty persnickety for me, and I wondered if it was just me. Like, Chris, when you're talking about your complaints with, like, the tutorial, I want to kind of piggyback on that, too, and say, you know, I thought that was just me, but, like, I also, how do I say this? I don't like it when I'm in a tutorial where if I accidentally click through like 2 seconds or I stop paying attention, like look up for 2 seconds and I miss a directive, I can never get back there. So what happened to me on one of the tutorial levels is I just, I don't know if I got called away from work or I get a phone call or I just spaced out for a second, but I was just like, oh, they taught me how to do something and I need that to finish the level. Okay, well, I'll just close out the program and open it back up and restart the tutorial. I don't know if either of you tried something like that.
No.
But if you do that, it'll just take you right, it like auto saves and takes you exactly back to where you were, which is actually really neat. Like, that's a really nice feature for a $4 game, unless you need to see what they told you before. And that happened to me the first time that I had to increase the speed on a, what do you call it? Not a trap, but like sort of what Chris is talking about, where you have to like,
yeah, just tighten it up essentially, or, you know, to make it fling farther.
I had like an extra steep learning curve for that just because I missed them telling me to do that. And I was just clicking around like it's a point and click mystery adventure game, just like trying to make everything interact until I got it.
I would literally waste about 4 to 5 donuts every single stage trying to figure out how to place one thing every time.
Yeah.
Because it's like it shows you A button, choose and place. But you're like, no, first you have to press the bumper button.
Yeah.
Or sorry, the shoulder button. And then you have to like press the trigger button and then you press A to choose and place. You know, it's like, yeah, the controls are needlessly not doing it for me in this particular software.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's enough of a detriment to really stop it. It's a $4 game. This is an easy, it's so cheap, I'd say just buy it. It's not even like a fuck it, why not? It's just an enjoyable game. Yeah. It's cute. It's good. I'd say it's worth your $4.
I agree.
And, you know, word of warning to you dog lovers out there, don't feed a dog donuts, especially chocolate donuts. I can't believe.
Or bomb donuts. Don't feed them bombs. Yeah.
Even if the bombs explode in sprinkles, it is still not okay, people. I think this is super worth it for $4. Like, I never think like this and I never say stuff like this, but like if I had a kid, I would buy this game for the kid because I actually think it's a really good like educational game on like momentum. A lot of the stuff they're trying to teach you in school, like just play a few minutes this game, kid. It'd be cool. I do think this is just a buy it across the board. Like, even somebody like me who, when I started to realize what the game is trying to do, I was thinking like, oh, hell no, this is not my thing. This is stupid. Like, I actually really like it now. I think it's my little nitpicky complaints that I have. Like, it's just me trying to find something. I absolutely think it's probably worth more than that. I was pretty impressed.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Mini Motorways, developed and published by Dinosaur Polo Club, released May 11th on the Switch for $14.99. Have you ever been stuck in traffic and wish you could do something to fix it? In Mini Motorways, the city's traffic problems are in your hands. Pernell, what did you do in Mini Motorways?
I realized just how valuable the basically what road construction and basically road design people are. Like, their role in city construction and city like road layouts, it's amazing, because fuck, this game is hard, but one hard at that. I originally played Mini Metro, which was a game where you were tasked with devising or designing a subway system, and when Nintendo announced on their direct recently that Mini Motorways was releasing onto the Switch, I was chomping at the bit to get access to this game, and thankfully it was provided to me, and I came away very happy with the product I got. Yeah, I already spoiled my review, but what is the actual
game? Cool, moving on, next game to talk now.
Now jack that back, you little Jew there. So the idea behind this game is a very easy concept. You have two things that exist in the world. You have people, or you have businesses, or shopping, let's just call them all shopping centers, and you have the people who want to get to them, usually by way of car. The game sets you up in a way where you go through a series of 7 days in a week, and at the very beginning of the game, they start you with simply a store and a house of one color. So a red business to a red house. If you connect them by using a road, a red car will come out of the red house and drive to the red business. There is a little like circular dot that's pointing on the business. That indicates one thing that needs to be sold from that facility. So a red car needs to get there, pick it up, and then take it home. For each delivery that gets done, you get a point. Now, if that was all the game was, this would be really simple and probably stupid. But here's what happens. As time progresses, because there's a clock in the upper right corner, days go by. And as time passes, buildings will start to pop up on your map. You will get new buildings and new homes of differing colors. And when these colors show up, you need to match them up too. So if a blue building pops up, you need to get a blue house to connect to it so that blue cars can make pickups there and take them home. As this takes place, things naturally become more and more chaotic and out of hand. The map starts out very small, and it expands as more things occur. And it's cool in the sense that it does it in a very nonchalant, like, non-obvious way. So one day you're just like, whoa, or not one day, but at one point you're just like, holy crap, this city's coming alive. And it's a beautiful thing to watch occur. Now, they don't just leave you with roads specifically and expect you to just survive, because you wouldn't make it very far at all. So what they decide to do, and after every week goes by that you manage to survive, you'll get a choice between two rewards. It usually comes in the form of either additional road tiles, or not, you'll always get additional road tiles generally, but in addition to that, you'll also get one of a few things. You might get access to a bridge that you can build to go over a body of water, access to a tunnel to go under a land, area that you want to tunnel on, like, say, for example, maybe a road that goes under houses or something like that. You can get expressways, which are a good way to build highways that go over homes. The people living in those homes would probably hate you if they were real, but in the context of the game, they can be a lifesaver by connecting two distant areas of a city. And then there's roundabouts, because this is Britain, apparently. And it allows you to pretty much like better divert traffic. And then the last thing, which I don't think I mentioned, was traffic lights, which can also be used to divert traffic. I know someone's hearing this right now and they're going, that sounds really boring. Why the fuck would I care about connecting roads and setting up traffic lights? And I'm going to tell you the answer to that, because you don't know what the hell you're talking about. This is a really this is one of those things where awesome. If you described it on paper, it would not seem fun. That's how I felt about Mini Metro initially, too. But when it's actually happening and you're actually playing it, it feels wonderful to experience. The music is this very calming melody that plays over the game. Every time a car lands and makes up a delivery, it makes a boop sound. And then when it delivers, it goes boop. And it's just satisfying to hear all these things happening in your little city. You can watch the city come to life and do what it does. You can pause the game and just stare at your creation. Then you can set it on fast forward and watch your creation go batshit crazy. it's just a wonderful thing. And there's no real, like, do this to win, because every level is meant to go until you just can't anymore. And you will eventually can't. The game will overwhelm you, and that's part of the fun, to see how far you can make it in a city before it goes to crap. Now, there's a variety of different cityscapes that they want you to build off of. Like, there's like, they're all based off of major cities like Tokyo, Los Angeles, Moscow, Munich. And you unlock more of these locations as you make more deliveries in the older areas, because for every number of trips you make, you unlock a new stage depending on where you did it. So, like, if you did like 300 trips in Zurich, you'll unlock Manila. Rio de Janeiro, you got to unlock it by doing 300 trips in Manila, and so on and so forth. And each time you go to these new levels, they each have their own different quirks and like things that you can get for the level as you're building it up. And there's also daily and weekly challenges too. And those are cool, because what they do is they give you conditions and unrandom like rewards and tile placement, because the intent is for everyone to play the same challenge and see who can do the best, and you upload your score to a leaderboard. And you only can upload your score once. So you have to really be satisfied with what you did to go, you know what, I'm good with this. Take that score. I'm content. This game is a gem. Like, it's, I loved Mini Metro, and I'm not quite sure which one I like more, but I do know it will be close. They're both really good games. This is totally a game you can zone out to on a lunch break or on a bus ride. Ha ha, right? Or just, I don't even want to call it killing time, because it's time well spent. it's a good cathartic exercise until your city implodes on itself. And then you'll also go and look at your local city planner and whatever state registry you've got, and you will go, you guys deserve fucking cupcakes and cookies, because even though I'm stuck in traffic all the time, I would not, you couldn't pay me to take that job in real life. In a video game, though, it's a lot of fun. And when everything goes to shit,
pay me for it. No way. But let me do it for free. Yeah, buddy, I'm there. Well, no, I'd rather get paid.
That's right. Well, no, you wouldn't, because you'll be spending your time wondering why people keep hurling tomatoes at your house because you suck at designing roadways. Why is there an interstate going over my house? How'd you get zoning commission to approve that garbage?
Well, the good thing is, as the game page says for this, you get to draw roads in dynamic cities that grow and change. Every game is unique.
Yeah, you just wanted to squeeze unique in there.
You're goddamn right I did. $15 on this one. What do you think, Purnell?
Absolutely worth it. Buy this game. And I think it's funny that Tim left before I got to this review, because he heard the perverted review. He didn't get to hear this nice, wonderful, classy review about city construction and city planning.
Oh, we know you're a pervert. Next game to talk about. So am I. Next game to talk about is Infinite Links, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released May 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Talismans are magical items that contain great power, even with some that can grant any desire. Kronos, a boy training as a wizard, and Serene, who consider one another as siblings, become enveloped in a talisman conspiracy. Will they be able to save themselves and the world from the threatening danger? Chris, tell us what's going on in Infinite Links.
Oh, boy. It's another Kemco XCreate game, boys.
How is it?
Strap in for a predictable time.
It could be predictable, but it could still be good.
No, it's good, yeah.
That's the thing I like with Kemco games.
I didn't say bad. I always say give these things good reviews. Now, just listen. I'm going to tell you a story. No, just kidding. Okay, this is a Kemco XCreate game. It's not related to Infinite Dunami, as I found out. And I think that Kemco just forgot that they already used the infinite word, like in naming their game this time. They were like, which modifier have we not used before? They just have like this list. I mean, you know, if it's not Asdivine or Alphadia.
True.
But speaking of which, this does follow the Alphadia and especially Asdivine formula. It is a 32-bit-ish RPG, all 2D, with these like pretty elaborate and very recognizably styled sprite characters. This time they have gone a little bit more the traditional JRPG route. The male protagonist, always a male protagonist, is a 16-year-old this time. Usually they age him to about early 20s, you know, like old man in JRPG terms, you know, very mature. But this guy is actually, you know, he's kind of average, you know, JRPG save the world and dethrone god age. joining our Kronos. And by the way, Kemco XCreate male protagonists always fall into one of two groups. One is the wide-eyed peppy do-gooder, who is just up for anything and just wants to, protect somebody or, you know, just defeat the bad guy, whatever. They don't need much motivation to get right cracking into, you know, whipping some monsters. And then the other is the misanthrope who doesn't actually want to be bothered, saving the world or anything. They just dressed up like a JRPG protagonist that day as a joke. So, this is actually the former category all the way. Kronos is a very, he's the wide-eyed peppy, I'm trying to be the best mage in the world, kind of dude. And joined with him is his little sister, who is actually kind of not his sister, and that's actually kind of maybe concerning. Because, like, you know, within the first hour of the game, people are already mistaking him for a couple. And I'm like, oh, no, not this again. Because this is actually also a Kemco trope. You see this in Dragon Lapis, for instance. Dragon Lapis, not Dragon Sinker. Not even. I'm actually getting them wrong.
Now there's too many Kemco games, obviously.
Are there, though?
No, there aren't.
No, I'm thinking of the wrong game. I will come up with the correct title by the end of this podcast. By the next game I talk about. Anyways, so yeah, they got the brother and sister thing going on. Thank God, within the first dungeon, you run into another female, you know, co-protagonist who is, you know, a flirty adventurer slash librarian slash, you know, has done a lot of stuff and is gainfully employed at the age of 16 type person who is looking for
yes,
who is looking for the talismans, which are the magical MacGuffin in the game. And once you are joined by these people, because you got to get a talisman back to your grandpa, spoiler alert for the opening scene of the game, really, past, like, you know, the tutorial dungeon, grandpa gets murdered by the big bad guy who is a bad wizard, and you got to go get him. This is another Chemco RPG trope. And yeah, so he, and then there's the, you know, the plot that happens is that big bad wizard decides to zap your protagonist, but then protagonist's sister gets in the way. Her name's Serene, by the way. She has a name. I'm just being, you know, purposely bad about you know, trying to attach names to characters you're probably going to forget. But she gets zapped and turned into a monster. Oh no. And but fortunately, Madia, who is the girl who you run into in the first dungeon, has the power to use a talisman to turn her back into human. However, this is a magic that has to be undone by defeating evil wizard guy. And so that is your quest. You got to go defeat evil wizard guy, turn your sister back into normal permanently, and you got to keep this other girl with you in order to you know, keep her from turning into a purple hair or purple skin, blue haired monster.
Yay.
Which is all that's when she turns into a monster, it changes her skin color and hair color, which is racist. Another Chemco trope.
Oh, Jesus. No, I'm kidding. That's terrible.
Okay. So, then of course you run into a second dungeon and pick up another character who you only just learned about a minute ago, and, you know, just their motivation is that, you know, they, you know, within 5 minutes they get their own convenient plot motivation to join you. So they join you. It's another peppy character, though. So, like, that's kind of weird. This game seems to be really light on the just throwing in, like, a completely wacky left field character. But then again, maybe that happens a little later. I don't know. There's 5 characters total in this game, by the way, instead of the usual 4. So,
they're changing it up.
I've noticed, though.
There's
no, like, wacky animal character or weird plant character.
Yeah, that's, like I said, they're kind of... They're going a little more traditional with this one, because, like, the original Alphadia also had no, like, weird characters like that. It was, you know, but it was way more serious than this one is. This one's still a little goofy. So, yeah, I've talked way too long about these characters. I didn't mean to do that.
It's okay. It's a Chemco game. You always do.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you love your Chemco games.
I can usually wrap these up in like 10 minutes, so I'm going to try and do that. The system for this game is it's very samey for like the current Chemco lot. So you've got your lottery system, both tickets and jewels. Monsters sometimes drop either one of them. If you save up your jewels and, you know, you get 10 at a time, and if you spend, but, like, here's the thing about the game. It's very easily breakable. It's because those jewels, those magical, like, rainbow stones or whatever, you get, like, 10 of them randomly after a battle. And if you save up 100, you can roll for a super-powered, like, 200-plus, like, stat-boosting, like, weapon for a character. My very first roll, I got the 5-star ultra-rare sword that just basically decimates everything. It's incredible. And then my second roll, I got the spear, which is what Madia uses. So I was like, my two characters are now, like, one-shotting everything. I accidentally had the speed boost turned on for, you know, grinding, because you can fast-forward, like, battle speeds in this game, which is another Chemco thing. And I accidentally beat a boss without actually seeing it. I just button mashed, and then the boss went down in one hit, and I was like, wait a minute, what was that? I was just looking at my characters and menu, and I didn't realize it was still fast-forwarding.
Wow.
So, yeah, that can happen. Of course, the game lets you ratchet up the difficulty as high as you like, so, you know, you can definitely get yourself challenged by this if you want, or turn it down to as easy as you want. Plus, of course, you can purchase DLC, you know, boosters, like experience and stuff. Plus, like, you know, like I said, 30 of those stones, like, really, like, three battles worth of randomly dropped stones, you can purchase an ore that you can then sell at a regular shop for 350,000 GP.
Holy crap.
Money isn't a thing in this game. Don't even worry about it. This game is like, you know, we put this stuff in here because, you know, we have to meet the requirements of this being a Kemco RPG, but really, just don't worry about it.
Well, money is an object when it comes to getting the game. Yeah. So for $15, what are your thoughts on Infinite Links?
Okay, so I like this one. It's charming and it's fun to play. I say go ahead and buy it like I always do. Don't expect a whole lot of wackiness in this one. It's more like feel good and serious than like, you know, the usual, which is comedic or like, you know, just completely ludicrous. So you want to see the wacky thing that happens next. This one's telling more of a story, even though it's a little generic, but I mean, you know who we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
I just got to chuckle because every time I heard you say the name of this game, I kept thinking, man, this would be like the best IHOP promotional ever.
I know. That's I called it the sausage buffet.
Yes.
Earlier.
Infinite Links.
Awesome. Exactly.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Ashigaru, The Last Shogun, developed and published by LGS Games Productions. Released May 20th on PS4 and PS5. I'm not too sure what the price is going to be, but based on their previous titles, I'm going to guess $99.99. We will have an update if there is a different price next week on the show when it launches on the 20th. In the Sengoku period, powerful daimyos fought for power and territories in a near-constant civil war in all of the country. This title was developed and created by visionary and legendary game developer Gilson B. Pontus. Purnell, tell us about your time Bless with him. Ashigaru.
You added that last part, didn't you?
No, Praise I him. Did not.
Are you, oh God. Okay. All right. So I'm going to do this right. So this game... I'm glad you also stated the plot of the game, because the interesting thing about this is that when you press start on the game, after it makes sure to tell you that Gilson B. Pontus did everything this game has to offer.
Yep.
It presents you with the story in the form of a variety, like a number of screens, one after another, with script that is like kind of just appears and disappears from that screen. However, it appears and disappears so quickly that you can't even read the plot. Not that it matters, because the way this game works is that you are spawned in a place called Yomi. You are a character. He has no name. You have one direction to walk, and it is forward. You cannot run. You can only walk very slowly, and you will continue to walk forward until you reach the marker, like the progression marker, to tell go here. And what you will discover is a sword. You will walk up to the sword, the screen will go black, and then you will appear in a large open field that is black and white, reminiscent of old samurai movies. You may appear with a horse. You may appear with a dog. The only thing that's confirmed is that you appear. At this point, a bunch of markers are displayed on the screen in a variety of directions, and you will run to one of them. If the horse appears with you, you can get on the horse and ride the horse. Not that it matters, because you can run faster than the horse can. So there's not even much of a point in getting on the horse.
I did see a video, and I loved that you ran faster than the horse. I thought that was beautiful.
It made me really sad. At first, the thing about it is, like, here's where it gets funny, because at one point, I didn't know it was gone, because I took the horse with me to one of the markers. And I think this happens no matter where you go initially. Wherever marker you follow, you come up to a shrine that has another sword on it. You walk up to the shrine, touch the sword, and there's like fires next to the shrine. They go out, and then new markers appear that you need to run towards. But the funny thing is, if you rode over with a horse and you're not looking at the horse when you touch the sword, the horse disappears. If you are looking at the horse when it happens, the horse runs away. And that's how I learned I could outrun a horse, because I tried to catch my horse jokingly, and I actually did. Why? That's sad. But whatever. I digress. I then did some speed challenges to just test my running speed against the horse by getting off and then running. I could outrun the damn horse. So, anyway. Once the new markers appear, you will then run towards one of those. It could be 200 plus meters away, 500 plus meters away. It's never less than 100 meters away, because Gilson wants you to work for your butter. You will run in that direction until you get to an enemy unit. I don't know what they are. By the way, that's what they are. They're daimyo lords. How do I know? Because when the game spawns you, it says assassinate the daimyo lord apostrophe S. The daimyo lords, what the hell if I know? But they keep reminding me that I'm probably be destroying something of theirs at some point. Whatever. Don't know. But they keep reminding me every time.
Accidental apostrophes.
And you will be reminded a lot, because whenever you come up on an opponent, you're supposed to fight them. The enemy will walk up to you. They have attack swings. They're kind of erratic. There's no tells or anything. It's just a swing, swing. And you can do one thing. Attack. Your attack really blows, because you will swing your sword and occasionally just collide with nothing. You'll just swing sword, but it just reflects back because you're hitting air. And other times, you won't have air. You'll actually do a full-fledged swing, which doesn't matter because you will never kill any of these guys. Ever, never, freaking ever. You will get hit one time, you will die, and then you'll respawn back in Yomi. It'll look different, but it's the same place with a singular path that leads to a sword that you can't run on. You can only walk slowly and contemplate what the hell you did with your life to get to this point where you're walking through Yomi very slowly to get to a sword that will get you killed inevitably, because you'll respawn back in a new era that looks exactly the same as the last one you were in. You will walk to the new shrine that's likely to be 200 plus meters away. That will spawn three new guys that you will run up to that are 200 plus meters away. They will kill you. You'll go back. You'll do it again and again and again and again. And every time you get into a fight, there's a voice on your controller that sounds like the guy from Mortal Kombat that says, fight. And when you die, inevitably, he says, game over. Which is not, because you do it again. And you'll say it again, over and over again. Nothing stops. Nothing changes. Oh, my God. It's like, I was wondering about this, because I've heard his name mentioned, because Chris has done the reviews for this guy many times.
And we actually have a sound effect from the one game. Let's play that quick. Yeah, there we go. That's a good scream.
I don't even know what it was, because I couldn't hear it, and I'm sure it was horrible.
It's just a ninja scream.
And it's funny, too, because I was like, it can't be that, but there's got to be something here.
Everybody thinks that.
I totally thought that. I'm like, maybe there's something that I'll notice. And all I notice is that he needs to go to Digirati. He needs to go there soon, because this isn't his first game. It's not his second, and it's not his third. And he still is content to say legendary guilt to be Pontus.
Why does he have to go to Digirati?
Because he needs to fucking learn how to design a game. He needs to go back to school and relearn this shit. How are you going to make multiple games, get to the point where you're putting it on PS5s, and it's like, still, it plays like your old crap. You've learned nothing. Only thing you've learned to do is bomb channels. Like, you're not good at this. It's bad. Like, this is really, really bad. Like, I've played games. Like, up until now, my worst game I've ever reviewed was a game called Tokyo Tattoo Girls. I reviewed it back in 2017. That has changed. Oh, geez. That is not that game anymore. It is this one. This is bad. Like, I swear. The funny thing is, like, it's not even just the design. It's the fact that every time you give it another shot, you have to slowly walk to the sword and then run 200 plus meters to a marker, and then run another 200 plus meters to another marker that kills you. And then you do it again. And nothing changes. Nothing gets better. You don't get better. One time I got lucky on an enemy. I hit him 10 times. And my character did the thing, was like, yay! Like, she was happy that she was doing something. Then the guy just stabbed me and I died anyway. It was like, okay, so what was the point of that? How many hits does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Samurai Pop? I don't know, because I'll never see it. I just keep dying. Like, I was trying. I was like, maybe if I can, like, read the guy's movements, I'll at least be able to come on the show and say, this is what happens when you assassinate a daimyo lord apostrophe S. And I didn't.
Here's the thing. Do it. Having played and reviewed, I think, 6 of these games by now, I can already tell you the answer. Nothing. Nothing happened. I have played one of these games, like, against these impossible enemies until I actually did take one down, and it took a long time, and nothing happened. Just nothing.
You just had to kill another one, right?
Yeah, they just made another one appear at some other point.
Nice.
And then that one killed you. It's like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I want Gilson himself to comment on one of these chests and tell us, can you beat any of his games? Is it possible? And if he claims yes, he needs to fucking do it himself. He needs to show the world that you can beat one of his games. And I want to see an ending where the text scrolls by too fast to read it.
I think it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I trained a robot to watch 9,000 Let's Plays of Dark Souls, and this is what it programmed for tutorial stage.
Like, my question is, like, is this intentional at this point?
It could be. I mean, let's be real here. And I'm being honest and sincere about this in the best way possible. How many games did you say you reviewed of his so far, Chris? You had a number just now.
Like six.
Like six games, okay? He's released seven games. If you haven't gotten better at this craft at seven games and you're describing yourself as legendary, legendary probably because people drag on his shit, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's notorious for sure.
It's either intentional or he just sucks at this. If it's intentional, he deserves some Cookie Crisp and a clap because this is entertainment. But if it's not intentional and this is just what he believes to be quality products, fuck. That's all I got to say. That's all I got to say. It's Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm glad there was.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm just glad that Joe didn't have a price for this game because if anything, the price should be, hey, I'll give you $4 to play my game and critique it for me. Tell me what you think.
No.
I give you $4 to play my game. I'll just mail you a check.
You're not getting any money, Purnell. That doesn't, no.
I want a check that says pay to Purnell Vaughn from the legendary Gilson B. Pontus. I want that. I want to frame it and put it on the wall.
And
that would be like bribery, Purnell.
Just like one of those games, you take that check to the bank, it's not going to work.
Oh, my God.
He's legendary. Oh, my fucking God.
All right. Well, enough ragging on him. We got to be honest. This is most likely going to be a $10 game. What are your honest thoughts?
I created a new review score for this show. We have buy it, try it, deny it, fuck it, why not? And now we've got yeet it. I give this game a yeet it. It gets a yeet. Yeet it.
Fire it into the sun.
Fired into the sun. Get it out of here. No dice. And I know you're probably thinking, Joe, wow, Bernard, you're really hamming it up. No, I'm telling you, these are genuine feelings. Like, I wanted to come into this and be like, this is not what everybody claims. No, they're right. This is really bad.
I just thought you'd have something funnier than yeet it.
No, yeet it. No, that is a funny thing for me because it's fun to say.
Yeet.
Yeet it.
Next game to talk about is I don't know how to pronounce this one. Brooke, do they say it in the game at all? Gosha? No. Goisha?
Maybe they said it in the first game because this is a sequel.
Goisha? I don't know.
They didn't say it in this one. Or at least they don't say it in the first hours.
It's okay. I can't say the developer's name either. So Goisha 2, developed by Moity and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released May 19th on the Switch for $9.99. Without any inventory, the player has to solve puzzles and make their way in this world, gathering information and fundamental elements to get their soul back into the body, using only the power of possession they received as a pure soul. Brooke, what's going on in this game?
Well, I mean, you pretty much summed it up there. Nah, this is a really interesting, fresh take on a classic point-and-click adventure game. You're on a vacation with your wife in Venice. That's nice. And you're having a pretty good time. But unfortunately, somehow you get noticed by a very bored demon. This demon, I guess he possesses people, but it's been a while. He's been going through a really awful dry spell lately. He's really pumped to have a 2-for-1 special. That's you and your wife. And you wake up one morning, not in your wife's arms in a beautiful Venice getaway, but as an orb of pure energy floating around various scenes. Now, why did this demon turn you into a floating ball of energy? It's unclear, but he seems to want you to solve different riddles to advance through a spooky and unsettling story. Now, how do you know this demon is going to set you free if you solve all his riddles and shit? That's what I'm thinking when I started this game. I mean, we don't know if he's going to set us free, but he's with you this whole time. He's sort of hanging out. He's sort of goading you, occasionally giving you a little weird hint or a push that kind of helps a little. He does seem to be invested in this one way or another. He is literally the devil on your shoulder. I guess you don't have shoulders because you're an orb. Okay. Get back to. I'm derailing myself here. This game does pretty much work exactly like a regular point-and-click adventure game. You can even hold down, I think it's L1, to highlight all the areas on a scene you can interact with, so you're not just clicking around blindly quite as much as you would normally. That's a feature that I personally got to have in my point-and-click adventures. But as Joe said, this game does have one twist going on in it, just mechanics-wise. Since you're a floating ball of energy, you know, you don't have hands. I don't know how you pick items up. Nobody does. Nobody knows. Science is still figuring that one out. But science has determined that you can pick up one item at a time. You can drag an item around once equipped, and you'll press a button to cause that item to interact with other items, if you get the right item for it to interact with. Be forewarned, though, the button that you hover over and click also is one of the two buttons you can press to unequip the item. So hover over items and click carefully to have these items interact with the other items in the scenes, or you'll likely become very annoyed that you just keep dropping stuff over and over. You know, I don't have a lot of complaints for this game. Very minor complaint I have is the thing I mentioned directly before this. But I'm also bringing it up because let's say that you hover over an item that you want to interact with in a room with your equipped item. But let's say that that's not the right item. You know, with these games, normally, unless you're just really smart or you got it down, you're going to be taking a lot of items and trying to get them to interact with a lot of different items across each scene. It's just a lot of that type of thing going on in this game. But if you, let's say that we click the button that causes the item to interact with the other item, but it's not the right fit. If it's not like a, how do I say this? If you haven't, I'm all over the place tonight, guys. Sorry. If you try to put the thing in the thing, if you try to get the item, God,
freezing tonight.
That was great, by the way.
I'm just gonna let Pernell finish this one, you guys.
Pernell, tell us about this game.
So if you click the item with the item, but it's not exactly the right item, it doesn't go away. It doesn't go back to your inventory. You're just gonna drop it. So that was like an extra paragraph to say what I had already said before. So then you gotta pick it back up. But you're just an orb. It's hard. It's hard to pick things up when you're an orb. You're lucky if you can pick up one thing. Another just small complaint I have in this game is that they don't really go over in the tutorial that all of these scenes you're exploring are multi-level, which is actually really cool. Like the first couple scenes I did, I didn't understand they were multi-level. And after I got past the first few stages, I came across a scene that's like, it's like five or six levels where like you just, there's a lot of stuff you're not seeing initially. But you can't go up through the ceiling or down through the floor, the earth, the water, whatever it is that is your base level for whatever type of scene you're in here. You basically have to drag your mouse along the top of the screen to even see if there's a space where you can kind of go up through it to the next part of the scene. And it's not like it looks different depending where you are on the screen. You're not using deductive reasoning to figure out, well, where can I go up and down to go like transcend the scene or go beneath the scene like I'm on an elevator. You kind of just have to drag it around until it works. So, and Aki's right. You know, my mind's still on McDonald's. I have McDonald's for dinner.
Totally fine to trip over your words on an episode that contains the phrase booby training.
Yeah.
Oh my God, thank you. And that really, you know, that takes me back to back in my day, booby training. But that's a show for another day. Show for another time, folks. I think I spent more time training there than others
the
may
best.
Have. Anyway, those are the only two complaints I have for this game. I do think this is a solid, interesting type of game. For the type of game it is, especially being on Switch, I think it's optimized well. I think it works. I think it does what it says it's trying to do here. I actually think this is a very good point-and-click adventure game.
Cool. So $10, your thoughts?
Ooh, it's $10. For some reason, I wrote down 20 when we talked earlier. So that actually skews my feelings here. Let me think about this on the fly a little bit. I had just like an idiot, written down to $20. And I said, for that price, if you're a decided fan of point and click mystery adventures, I think this is a super solid buy it, because it does fit right into this subgenre, but it is offering a different type of gameplay. And I think it's more challenging than your average point and click mystery adventure game. That's how I felt when I thought it was $20. I was going to call this a try it or a fuck it, why not, when it's on sale. But now that it's 10, I like how I hit you up earlier, Joe, so I wouldn't be thinking on the fly for the price part and the rating part, and I'm still doing it.
I was so proud of you, too, when you messaged me. I'm like, someone's taking the initiative. They want to know how much their game costs for review. It's not going to be like, hey, the final cost is $10. What do you give it? And you're like, what's the price?
Dude, and I'm over here like oh,
Jacob always fucking does. Fucking Jacob.
I will say this.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I kind of want to look at this game a little bit more now, because it kind of, I'm not sure how accurate this statement is, but it started giving me thoughts of like Ghost Trick, at least in certain elements, like how you were describing the gameplay format here. And I love Ghost Trick, so.
I haven't played that. I'm going to have to look that up. Let me write this down.
Ghost Trick has a lot of good fans.
Yes. Like, you've played it before, right, Chris?
I haven't played it, but I'm a big fan of the soundtrack.
Oh, Christ. But that goes to both of you. If you can find it, emulated or otherwise, it's one of the best DS games ever made. And I'm not saying that lightly. It is worth your freaking time.
That's awesome.
It's on my radar for sure.
That's cool.
I actually do still play 3DS.
Yeah, I'll check that out right after this. I want to call it a buy it for everybody, but it's, I think my gut on here, even though the price did change from what I foolishly incorrectly wrote down, I think that for people who like point and click mystery adventures, like this is actually an awesome thing that fills out, like, it's a hallmark of its genre. It's really doing something totally different and interesting. But I think that if you know that you don't typically like those types of games, I wouldn't buy it unless you think that you're interested in that type of game. I also think I wouldn't, unlike Unforeseen Circumstances or Unforeseen Incidents or whatever we reviewed a few months ago, I found that game to be like the perfect, like, very first point and click mystery adventure game. Like, anyone who stumbled across that for their very first one, I think would have an awesome time. This, I think you need to play a few point and click mystery adventure games to really appreciate what this one's doing and to be up for the challenge. So it's my long-winded way of saying I think this game is really worth the money, but know what you're getting into, because it's really doing its own thing here.
Cool. So it sounds like an overall try it. If people are curious, the original game is also available on the Switch for, I believe it's on sale for $5 right now.
Oh, awesome.
So otherwise, it's $10.
I think the original game is actually on my wish list somewhere.
Well, there you go. It's on sale for $5. So.
Sweet.
On the Switch, you said?
Yes.
Switch, you say?
Switch, yes. We're talking about Switches. Now we're switching over to Steam. Next game to talk about is Dungeon Reels Tactics, developed and published by Grandma's Basement Games, released May 1st on Steam for $14.99. Dungeon Reels Tactics is a challenging party-based RPG roguelike with slot machine-based combat. Your party members, unique. Slot machine will supply your abilities each turn. Make the best decisions to succeed in battle, lose party members, recruit new ones, and try to reach the great evil. Purnell, what's going on in Dungeon Reels Tactics?
Now, that's a description for a game right there. And genuine modesty. I appreciate it. Especially because this is a quality title right here. And this is another example of a game where I wasn't sure what I was getting into, but I came away pleasantly surprised. There's a narrative to the game that I didn't go into knowing 100% well. I just was like, hey, there's a great evil. Gotta take it out. So I rolled with that. And the way that the game sets you up for it, at the very beginning of the game, you have to choose two characters, essentially. But this doesn't do it like you would normally do it in the game. They kind of have a little bit of like a visual tweak to it. You actually scratch off a ticket by actually dragging your mouse back and forth over a scratch-off ticket. And once you've revealed it, it contains three characters, of which you choose one of them. Each character has 10 different attacks, not 10 different, but 10 attacks, usually broken up into three or four different attacks. So, for example, I'm just making these up to an extent, but like one character might have like a 4 cannon attacks, 3 pistol attacks, 2 like defense buffs, and then like another that involves like something just pleasant. And then you'll choose it again. And then after you have your 2 characters, you'll be dropped onto a map reminiscent of something like Slay the Spire, where it's a bunch of nodes that are connecting from point A to point B in different directions, and you have to choose the one you want to go to. Each node has its own series of events on it that could take place. For example, like a typical battle could be there, or a fate station, or a shop, and I'll explain those all in a second. But let's just say you click on a battle, because that's the meat of the game, really, right? You will start moving your party down the node. And if you just got your first 2 party members, there'll be like a little short vignette of them talking to each other. It's a little funny dialogue where it's like, oh man, if we gotta defeat the demon so I can get back to, partying or something funny like that. They all have like all the characters themselves like their own little motivations, and when the right combination of them are together, they have like this little conversation. And I actually enjoyed that a bit. But then after that happens, you'll get to a battle. And what happens is the game generates a map, and it produces a number of enemies that you'll have to fight, and it plops them down, like, one after another, all over the map. It's not even done in a sense of, like, all your guys and all of their guys. It is literally, like, monster, 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 your guy, monster, 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 your guy, monster, monster. And while it's never completely unfair from what I experienced, you will have some drops. You're like, holy shit, I'm in trouble. I gotta come up with a plan here. Because after that happens, the game does a legitimate roll for initiative. All the characters end up doing like a roll. You don't see the die roll, but the game tells you what the initiative rolls turn out to be. And based on that, that determines the turn order. And you have to get down to business. Now, when it is a character that you possess's turn, a slot machine will occur. And it will do like a typical slot 3, where it'll line them up. And depending on what comes out, that's the 3 attacks you get that turn.
I want to read the slot machine thing from the Steam page.
Okay.
Says each party member has their own unique slot machine. Each turn, the slot machine will give you 3 random abilities from your reel. Make the best decision each turn to dominate the battlefield. Get 3 of a kind to trigger your party members' unique jackpot ability.
And I'm glad you said that, because that leads me into like something that can happen if the slots play out to your favor. How I mentioned before that each character has a different number of attack type that will show up in their reel. So let's say, for example, you have 5 cannons. That means that you have a pretty decent chance of getting 3 cannons in a row on your slot reel output. If you get all 3 of those, you will get the jackpot, as Joe mentioned. And the jackpot is a super special attack that every character gets is unique to each type of character. And it really can turn the tide. Like, whenever I got a jackpot, I got legitimately excited. Like, yes, use it. And you can also, I think before I could top, you can also slowly build up to jackpots as well if you just seem to be that unlucky with the slot reel. But anyhow you get them, they're fun to use. And if you build up the meter for it instead of getting it on the jackpot itself, the game has to give you the choice of who you want to use the jackpot attack on. Like, you don't have to necessarily use on the guy who filled the bar. You can, like, no, save it for the next guy, and they'll use it. But you do get to use every attack or ability you acquired on the slot reel, as long as there's a target that's nearby that you can use it on. And you can also have a movement ability, so you can like move around the map. Like, each character has their own movement stats, so you can like move a certain number of distance steps, and you end your turn. When an enemy goes, the enemies have like 2 to 3 different types of attacks they can do. But unlike what the characters get, the game will still choose what attack they want to do, but their reel will be a singular reel. And it will be tiles that differ between the different levels of damage they can do. So if it has like a 4 to 7 damage description for the move that they'll do, it'll be a 4, 5, 6, and 7 spot on their reel. And it's going to choose what they do damage with. And they'll do their thing. And then you'll do your thing. And it goes back and forth until the battle's over. When the battle's over, you'll get more scratch-off tickets that determine like certain like rewards. And you will also get level-up experience points. If a character levels up, gets enough experience to level up, you'll get to choose between either upgrading one of your attacks to something new, or you'll be able to update one of your like general stats, like attack power, range, movement speed, or I want to say the last one was like defense. Because there's also like a shield mechanic in the game too, where like Halo or zero FPS game where your shield takes damage before your health does. And you can keep bolstering that if you want. Now, The last thing I wanted to mention before I get too far in the weeds with this game is the different tiles you can land on. There's the fate tiles. If you land on a fate tile, you'll get five cards that pop up that generate a benefit, a boon, and a bust, I like to call it, because, you know, gambling rules. Where the boon is something awesome that will happen for your party, but the bust is something that's bad that will come with it as a result. And there are no wins here. Like, you'll always get something and lose something. And one of these things you'll come across sometimes is a fate key. You'll get the key in exchange for killing a party member off, like, flat out. They die. But there, and the thing is, like, you need to get it at least once, because at the end of a run, there's like a bunch of like main bosses that show up, and then there's like a final boss behind them. But you can only access the final boss by acquiring 3 out of 5 keys, and they can be obtained in different ways. There's the one I just mentioned being the fate key. There's one for fighting a special boss that's hidden on one of the tiles. There's beating a boss, like a specific, like 3 of the bosses total. That'll give you 1 key. I think there was one where you could buy it from a shop, and there was like 1 other one. But you got to get at least 3 of those keys to access the final boss in the game. There's also a shop where you can take your money and buy new like items and stuff, like equipment for your characters and things of that nature, or like healing items and the like. And there's like occasionally you'll come across a scratch ticket where you can actually recruit new characters too. Like, you know, the same thing you did at the beginning, you'll scratch the ticket, you'll get a new character, and then you'll be able to, you know, pad out your roster to a total of up to 4 people. This game is really fun. like, I was legitimately having a good time playing this game. The one complaint I had, and it could have been a me problem, but I'm going to state it anyway. Don't even waste your time trying to use the controller. I tried to use a controller. It was driving me bonkers. I was trying to like get everything to work as I wanted. There was a couple of times where the input just didn't think it was doing what I needed it to do. Like, I was trying to end a turn and it just couldn't do it. And I was really prepared to go out and pan the fact that the controls didn't work. But I was like, you know, let me just take the controller out entirely, start the game over, and see if I had better luck with mouse and keyboard. And I had absolutely better luck that way. No problems at that point. And in fact, I realized it's actually just better to use the mouse and keyboard for the sake of how the game works. You can't scratch the ticket with the controller, but you can with the mouse, and that's more fun anyway than just pressing X to show them all.
Yeah, the Steam page lists it as partial controller support. I'll go over some quick key features real quick. There's 24 characters to recruit and unlock, 30 enemies, 6 bosses, 40 relics, 100 fate cards, and 26 unique arenas. For now, the game's $15, what's your verdict?
Oh, this is a fuck it, you better buy. This is one of those.
Pernell's just making up scores tonight. He's
every time. I gotta make up a positive one. I already made up a negative one, right? I gotta go to the other spectrum.
Yeet yourself over to the Steam page.
That was so good. That was the best. Like, I feel awesome. Like this is one of those games where I feel like they took something that already exists, but they put a decent and like, oh, here we go, unique spin on it that makes it feel fresh, in a sense that I look for this kind of stuff when I play new games, and I'm happy to see something like this come out, and I hope more people give it a chance. Reward them for doing something different.
Cool. All right, next up, Pogo Champ, developed and published by Jake Rabinowitz on Steam Early Access for $9.99. Pogo Champ is a hilarious 3D platformer inspired by I Am Bread and Getting Over It, but with a deliberate focus on being fun, not frustrating. Where most Quap-like games involve complex and unintuitive control schemes, Pogo Champ's controls are easy to understand, though still tricky to master. Chris, what is Pogo Champ?
Okay, so I actually have not played that bread game, but I did watch somebody play it, so I do kind of get what they're coming from here. Okay, so this is a physics-based, you know, try to get from point A to point B, but the entire world and all of gravity is against you. So you play as a crash test dummy who is jumping on a pogo stick, which, I don't know, maybe there's a story there, I don't think we need one, really. but yeah, you go into the stage and you're dropped in, and it's kind of like a test environment, you know, at least for the first, you know, few stages. It's they do get more elaborate and you know, interesting new scenes do develop over time. But yeah, you get dropped in at one point, and, you know, you have to pogo your way to the goal. So the way that you try to do this is by basically using the stick to tilt your character and then holding down the button in order to kind of build up energy. And so you kind of have to do this as you land, because as you land and gravity kind of pushes you down, then you kind of charge it up to push it down further, and then that, you know, gives you a bigger boost going forward again. However, if you overcorrect or turn your character into the other, like, you know, suddenly you're leaning back instead of forward, well, now you're going to be pogoing backwards. So it's all about, like, kind of correcting yourself and keeping yourself correct and kind of keeping some mellow control over your character and not panicking. The game is extremely generous on not making you fall over every single time you mess up. Your character can, in fact, basically, you know, kind of like that motocross game, like, you can practically put your, you know, yeah, you can trim your sideburns from for how, you know, far you can lean. But once you actually hit something with your head, then you crashed, and then you have to, like, you know, start over. So yeah, of course, the environments get more tricky and more obstacles get put in your way, as well as more things to kind of get you to where you're going. You know, everything from, like, conveyor belts on the ground to, like, things that make you jump higher, cannons that you can shoot yourself out of, you know, just all kinds of ridiculous things. And of course, the goals get put into, like, more and more elaborately, you know, tricky areas. It's not just, oh, here's some stairs. There is one stage, though, that's just like, here's some stairs. So, there's a ton. So basically, progression in the game goes that you can basically choose a bunch of levels in, like, a group of levels to play in whatever order. However, in order to pass into the next group of levels, you have to have collected a certain amount of medals by completing the stage in a certain amount of time. And you get more medals if you do it faster. And in fact, I managed to get so fast in one stage that I got the expert medal and 78th place in all of the world, because every single stage has global ranking.
Oh,
so yeah, it's early access, though. It's not actually a big deal, but yeah. I just wanted to say I'm the 78th best at this one level in this early access pogo stick game.
I am proud of you. It is hitting full release on May 26th, though. It is hitting version 1.0. I don't know if there's going to be a price adjustment or not. So if you're interested, you'll probably want to get onto it early.
Yeah, and so, by the way, so there's many, 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 many levels in the regular game. There's an achievement for beating 75 levels, so that's to let you know that there's more than that. There's also lots of other achievements for, like, ridiculous things, so this game does mean to go on. But not only do you have access to all of the levels that are in the game, in the game's main campaign, as you were a pogo stick campaign, there's also a daily challenge where you get 10 levels that you can try and play through with only 3 lives total. So it's kind of more for people who are used to the game, but that is where you're going to see, like, some more interesting, like, challenges and obstacles if you're still in the early part of the game. But yeah, like, I do like that it's a ridiculous physics game that doesn't actually follow real world physics. And, you know, it's very floaty and very, like, you know, like I said, generous. But it's all, like, it's not in a bad way. It's more like in a intentionally goofy and also, like I said, very forgiving way that makes the game, like, more accessible, and it makes you want to play it some more. So
cool. Well, $10, your verdict?
Yeah, $10. This one is worth it. I mean, if you're paying $10 or whatever for a game where you play a piece of toast, and, you know, if you think that game sucks, then yeah, maybe try this one. So far as like these kind of physics based puzzle games go, like these goofy ones, I'd say this one's my favorite to at least, like, actually play. Nice. Because yeah, it is pretty neat.
Cool. All right, one final thing to talk about is some DLC we got for Wingspan European Expansion, developed and published by Monster Couch, released May 5th for the game Wingspan on available platforms for $9.99. With a brand new region comes a larger pool of birds to discover, each accompanied by a recording of its voice. European birds also have a set of brand new and diverse abilities. Use end of round powers, pick up food from opponents, occupy diverse 2 slots with one... Shit. You broke me. Occupy 2 slots with 1 card and more. Purnell, you have less than 10 minutes for this because I told Brooke we'd be done by midnight, so fucking hurry. What is Wingspan European Expansion?
Speed run.
Speed run.
You're killing my time, folks.
No, just kidding. Take your time for now.
No, don't. You got to hurry. We got 10 minutes.
So Wingspan is a game. Wingspan is a game where I guess I should describe a little bit of how the game plays. You're essentially placing birds on a board to generate like sort of chain reaction abilities to activate, you know, basically better and better, you know, score boosting abilities. The board consists of three regions, the grasslands, the forest, and the wetlands, and each of these places gives you a certain ability. So one, the grasslands, the forest will let you pick up food from like the food tray. Basically I'm just going through it because this is the expansion review. You already know if you want the game or not. The plains or fields or whatever lets you essentially lay eggs on the bird's nest that can actually hold eggs for you. And the wetlands lets you draw new bird cards from the bird card dispenser. And then you can, of course, play birds if you have the food that's required to lay them on the board. The base game is honestly a lot of fun. I loved it very much. I gave it a solid buy. I actually own every expansion for the physical game, too. So what does the European expansion add that might potentially make it worth your while to purchase as well? Well, one of the main complaints a lot of people had about the original Wingspan was that it didn't have a lot of bird abilities that allowed you to directly interact with other players. It was mainly a lot of like mainly solitary, with the only interaction being winning the rounds over other players or essentially taking a bird they wanted to get from the bird dispenser. But now there are birds that have special new abilities that will allow you to be doing things based on what other players do. For example, there's abilities that will allow you to like covet food from the bird dispenser that if another player takes a certain item from the bird dispenser, or if a player has wheat, you can steal their wheat and put it on your bird to hold for later use. Though the game's not mean, because Elizabeth Hargrave just makes really friendly games. So even though when you take their wheat, they're allowed to get new food from the food dispenser. Just, you might want to try to bar them from getting wheat instead. So there's a lot of power that lets you do stuff like that. There's also one really cool bird that took me a while to get used to, like a type of bird where normally when you place a bird on the board, it costs you one egg as a resource to put them down. And as you get further from the left to the right of your board, it costs more eggs to play a bird. But there's a specific type of bird in this game now that actually takes up two spaces. So when you pay the cost to put them down, you turn it sideways instead of upright. And that means you can pretty much get yourself further down your line to get better, you know, action abilities without paying the cost of putting two birds on the board. You just put down one bird. Of course, the detriment to that is that's one new power that you don't get to get. Actually, maybe two powers, because the bird's power was to take up two spaces. So less chaining you can do. But I feel like I want to read like a few quick bird names out of my book here, because
oh Jesus, like Pern.
Oh hush, you goddamn fuss. So the first bird I want to name is the black woodpecker. When activated, you get to gain all the worms that are in the bird feeder. So basically, it's a good way to just like say, activate the grasslands. I play my black woodpecker. Give me all the worms. So everybody gets pissed off about that. Then the next bird is the great tit. activated, reset the bird.
Oh, my God. He said he was going to do it.
He promised the tit this episode, and we got the tit.
Oh, my God. He waited until I forgot. I'm freaking out. Okay, sorry to interrupt. That was amazing.
When activated, you reset the bird feeder, and when you do, you gain one item from it. So it's essentially saying, okay, I don't like what's in there, despite how many items are in it. Roll all the dice again, and now I want to take this item out of it. So it's a pretty good ability, worthy of the great tit. And there's like a lot of different birds. I think I want to say there's like added 81 new birds to the game, on top of the original games having like 100 and something. And it also added the 10 birds that originally came with the modified future releases of Wingspan. Like, it's like just 10 new birds in general. So you get more birds with that as well. And of course, though it doesn't really promote it as much in the description, I want to believe it also gives you the additional round-in conditions and bonus cards that the original expansion gave. So as far as I'm concerned, if you like Wingspan, there's legitimately zero reason to not buy European expansion. This is one of those games where the expansion is just add more to the game. And something I should also mention, because a lot of games have this problem and this one doesn't, when you add all the new birds and they come with their new abilities or whatnot, you might be concerned that they dilute the deck too much, which means now certain birds might not come up, or you might not be as capable of pulling off certain rounding conditions. Well, the way they did this is all the birds. I said, no, I wonder if they actually showed this on the main game in the digital game too. But I'm sure they do. Because why would they not? They pretty much based it off on a set of percentages. So it's like, okay, if you want to go for this goal where it's like have this many birds with, I don't know, like circular nests to get this bonus point, they tell you the percentage of birds in the deck that have that type of thing. So you pretty much learn the odds of what it will take to get that score, you know? So it's like they do a good job with this game. Like, it's a solid product. And as far as I'm concerned, this expansion is worth your money.
Cool. $10, your verdict?
I think it is worth every dime. It's worth your money. Give it a bite.
Cool. Rock on. We made it. Yay. Made it through the episode. It's not midnight yet, so Purnell, you get to live another day.
I would have respawned. Don't you worry.
You would have respawned in Yomi. You know that, right?
Don't you fucking do that to me. Do that to me. That sounds like if I actually end up going to hell when I die, that's probably what it will be.
It will be nothing but Gilson games. Yeah, that is it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for being here, hanging out. Thanks to Tim for being here, doing his thing. And huge thanks to Jim Dershberger for coming on and chatting Rift Tracks with us. Go check out the game. It is only $10. It is awesome. It is worth your money. Go give it a play. Music this episode, we're playing some Viking guitar off of the Soundfall soundtrack. So does anyone have any final words to end the episode?
Modesty is awesome. Don't be legendary if you can't stand to live up to the legendary fucking status. God damn it. Freaking terrible.
Does anyone else have any words that they're not going to stumble over to end the show?
Fuck you, Joe.